I will call the City of Dallas City Council briefing meeting for June 6, 2012 to order. I would ask Judge Hill to give us our invocation, and Ms. Margolin, if you could lead us in the pledge.
God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, you God who have brought us thus far on the way, both personally and corporately, we pause now before your awesome and magnificent presence. We pause to praise you because you're God. And we pause to thank you because you're gracious in every situation and circumstance. And now, God, as we begin this another session of the Dallas City Council, I ask your choicest blessings upon this gathering and upon each and every person in this place and under the sound of my voice. God, I pray for our beloved city. I pray that you will lift us up, that we may be a shining star in the world of cities. This day, God, pour out your anointing afresh upon each of us as we take on the city's business, as we bring to this place our personal hurts and pains. Give us healing that we may get past that and do the business with which you have entrusted us. This is our prayer. Amen.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Ms. Margolin. Thank you, Judge Hill. Let me talk just a moment about our agenda today. We're going to be doing is approving, after our open microphone speakers and our presentation, we're going to be approving our minutes, consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. We will take up the DART Board of Directors motion, and if we're done by 10 o'clock of that, we will move to briefing item B, the local preference contract limits on competitive bidding, and then we will go into executive session for the morning. We will then re-adjourn at 1 p.m., where we will take up briefing A, the city manager's recommended bond program. One of the reasons I've got to step out this morning and shorten the morning session is I will be going to the funeral of a real legend in the city of Dallas. Mr. Joe Hager, Jr., passed away on Friday. Joe dedicated himself to the enrichment and growth of Dallas in many, many ways. He was a major business leader in this city, was led one of the most important businesses for the city in the 60s, 70s, 80s. And he also decided to give back to the city for running for city council. And sat around this horseshoe. He was first elected in 1980. He served in two terms, and it was a tough time because we were moving from kind of 8-3-1 to 14-1, and we were going through that. He chaired the Finance and Personal Affairs Committee, ad hoc search committee for his new city manager. He served on other committees as well, public safety and police and fire pension fund, legislative affairs, all the things that we do day in and day out. I've talked to a lot of people that served with Joe, and everybody to a man or a woman has said that there wasn't a finer individual that treated people with respect and the sense that we can be proud of in the city of Dallas. Joe Hager was a major hero of mine because he cared about the least of these. He was a major fundraiser for the St. Jude's Children's Hospital, and really kind of his heritage was of Lebanese. As you know, Danny Thomas up in Memphis was Lebanese, so that Lebanese community came together and they raised a lot of money for that. And then he was a stalwart of the Catholic Church here in the city of Dallas, helped through some of the toughest times the Catholic Church faced here, and he was just there, and his faith was premier in his life. So I'm going to be doing that. I wanted to take a moment to recognize him, and if you don't mind, I would take a moment of silence in honor of our ex-city council member, Joseph Hager, Jr. Thank you. Mr. Atkins?
Thank you, Mayor, for those kind words for Joe Hager. I've been knowing Joe for over 40 years, and sometimes people do not know what had Joe done for the city of Dallas. You know, he probably was one of the first guys who came south of Dallas to help Bishop Dunn High School. He gave so much money to the Catholic community, but also to Southern Dallas, to grow Southern Dallas. Everybody probably remember him by his slacks, you know, the Sandra Bell slacks, you know. But Joe was a kind person, a person that if you know Joe, you ask him something, he will try to help you, but he tried to help all part of the community. And I just want to say, Joe, thank you for his leadership to help me, to guide me through Bishop Dunn to SMU. And he just was my friend and one of my best friends. Again, thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Cadange?
I, too, also would like to give accolades to Joe Hager. I am half Lebanese, and I grew up with their family, the entire family. I knew each and every one of them, and the entire family is like that. They're fine people. They're very loving people, and he's going to be sorely missed in his community. I don't know anybody that didn't love Joe. So thank you, and thank you, Lord, for giving him to us for the time you did.
Amen.
Thank you, Mayor.
Amen. Ms.
Hill. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for allowing me to add my voice to the accolades of Joe Hager, Jr. When I first came to Dallas as a baby attorney, he was on the council.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind and gracious to me. He took the time to know me personally. He did not have to do that. He was a council member, and I was just the young city attorney who was wanting to do a good job. He always encouraged me. Every time he saw me, he spoke to me and continued to be a friend to me throughout my career. His spirit lives on with us. My condolences to his family. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, and his spirit does live on with us. Thank you for all for taking that moment. Hey, one thing I get to do as mayor, as chair, is to call out the people that are listening. But my mother's in town, and so she's listening in the radio. So, hi, Mom. I think I get to do that. I never get to do that, so I want to do that. We have a special presentation today by a visiting mayor. And that's Mayor Carl Sherman of DeSoto. Mayor, thank you for being here. Would you come on up? And I think you have some words. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mayor Rollins, and Mayor Pro Tem Medrano, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins, and my good friends Linda Coop and Sheffy and Von Seal Hill. I feel like I'm at my own council meeting sitting among friends here. Mayor Rollins, I wanted to come and thank your council and your leadership for support in the South Suburban area. I am here along with one of our council members, Council Member Patricia Ledbetter, who is also here to officially thank you for your support. The spirit of Mr. Hagert still resides in this council concerning himself with the least of these. DeSoto is an all-America city. We are the largest city in the South Suburban area with 50,000 people. But yet we are little D to you guys. You are truly the big D, and that's good for us. But a project that I want to thank you in particular about is Daniel Dale Road. For our city, it has been a challenge for us to create a road that is passable for our commercial district. And the largest corporate tax contributor for our city is on that road. And for years, each mayor would pass that action item to the next mayor. And by the grace of God and your support, and Dallas County, our Commissioner Price, and the Commissioner's Court, we were able to get the first part of Daniel Dale Road done. And now I understand from Mayor Pro Tem Atkins that the west side of Daniel Dale Road will proceed soon. And I want to thank your Economic Development Corporation for its support and leadership on this project. In the end, as I close with these remarks, the South Suburban area is truly an undeveloped market, and our city, DeSoto, hopes to be one of the leaders in transformation for the southern sector of Dallas, as we are the gateway from Austin to Dallas. And I think that aesthetically we could use some working together in how we master plan that area. I'm sick and tired, if I can say that term, I'm sick and tired of seeing the southern sector relegated to bottom-tier commercial development. We are fine with storage houses and fast food. I'm not against or opposed to fast food and storage houses and check cashing places, but I am against the saturation of those businesses in any market. And so I hope that that thoroughfare I-35 that we share will be used to change the area with Tier 1 commercial development. Thank you very much, and we appreciate your continued support, and we look forward to partnering with you for a sustainable future. God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Sherman. We share your vision with you, and we'll be working hard. Ms. Koop.
To the mayor. I don't know how long I've known the mayor now. It was way before I was an elected official.
It's been a while.
I will say that Carl's got star power, and it was recognized 12 years, maybe a dozen years ago, when I was on the DRMC, which is a transportation body, as a dartboard member, and Carl, I think, had just been elected as a city council member, and we sit out in that parking lot, and he is such an intelligent young man, and I thought, you know, I went around and told all my friends, you know what, we need to make sure that Carl Sherman gets the information he needs and the support that he needs, you know, and I guess maybe some advice too along the way. And so I'm just so proud of you, Mayor. You know, now that you're mayor, I just it's one of those deals where you recognize some talent in a young individual, and they grow, and then pretty soon they become a mayor, and they're, you know,
well,
they turn around and thank you to council. This is a great day here.
Thank you. You lost me on that intelligent part.
No.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. And Mayor Sherman, let me just say that, and I give credit also to Mr. Atkins. When you look at the new surroundings and the quality retail that's headed in that immediate direction, I-20 and Hampton and all over, from Chili's to all of the new shopping strips to the Purrs, all that leads into DeSoto and to Dallas. That's where we're going. And those are the things that I'd like to see Mayor and Council at Lancaster Key Shopping Center. Let me make sure I get in that plug. But those are the types of quality retail that I enjoy and we work very hard to accomplish. Let me also say that I frequent DeSoto. I'm very familiar with the Daniel Dale Road and all of the great things that are happening. And when I say I frequent DeSoto, I get in a little plug here. I go over to RT's, the sports grill.
And thank you
in DeSoto. I want you all to know it. It's excellent chicken wings and atmosphere. They just have a good thing now. But I want to credit you. And I want to credit you for coming here and visiting with our council, but more or less Mayor to Mayor Rollins and to Mayor Sherman. You all collaboratively working together for the benefit of the southern portion of our city. And I wish more collaboration was like that with even more of the other areas of town. But this is the kickoff and this is the beginning. So good mayors do great things, and two good mayors together, we will continue to grow. And I invite and encourage you all, continue to work together on behalf of the southern portion of our city. Granted, we as one will benefit, and it will benefit all. So thank you for all the great things that you have done, will continue to do. And thank you, Mayor, for all that you're going to do as we move forward.
Thank you, Councilman.
Thank you, Mayor.
I will also relay your support for RT's and Robert May, the owner of that place.
Thank you, absolutely. Mr. Atkins?
I guess Dwayne can say it all. I'm going to be brief. Mayor Sherman, thank you, and also Bobby Waller, you know, the former mayor of DeSoto. For the last 5 years, we worked, you know, hands in hand and trying to grow all those mayors south of the gateway to come to the city of Dallas. You might be wondering, there's probably 200,000 people every day travel down 35 and 67 coming to Dallas, and there's our gateway. And those suburbs do bring tax money, sales tax money to the city of Dallas to have those great opportunities. But it goes to show you that when you have great cities south of you, and remember, we always go north, and city of Dallas is north of DeSoto, so we are growing north according to economic development opportunity. But we are a great partnership, and we just need to, in the future, think about our border lines and our cities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane.
Thank you, Mayor Sherman, for being with us. And I've known Mayor for just before I think you became mayor, didn't you?
Yes.
And it's been a very pleasant experience, and you all have done a fantastic job down there. You've worked with us on different occasions, and you'll continue, I'm sure. And we'll continue to work with you. And let me tell you, that 50,000 votes is very important as we move south. And we do need them. And we appreciate you working with us on the things we do down there. Thanks, Mayor, for being here.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mayor Sherman. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Rollins. And I look forward to hearing you speak in Florida, sir.
Okay. Thank you. I look forward to speaking about the U.S. Conference of Mayors that's coming up in June. Ms. Soon, I think you have a presentation.
Yes, we do. Ms. Medrano.
We were at a...
Oh, Ms. Medrano.
Ms. Medrano is going to make the presentation, and just by way of introduction, Deserve Dallas gave the city a very nice recognition that Ms. Medrano is going to talk to us about for our work.
Thank you, Mary. And, of course, Mary joined us that evening. It was the 13th Annual Preservation Dallas Award Night, and we had Ms. Alonso, Ms. Davis, Mr. Cadane, Ms. Margolin, and Mr. Allen present that evening at the lovely Majestic Theater. And we received this honor from Preservation Dallas, and it was a nice evening at the Majestic. And you know, of course, you know, history is important, and preservation is absolutely important, and the stewardship is also very important. And I know that Ms. Hutt is on here, but she constantly reminds us that preserving, you know, our history and being good stewards is economic development, you know, especially for our city and for neighborhoods. And I want to thank the council members for being there. At that presentation, they also shared a video. And I will tell you that I know that made all the council members and Ms. Sum very proud to view the video. And as soon as the video was over, all of us looked at Ms. Sum and said, we've got to get a copy of that video. But it really makes you very, very proud to live in our city and the things that we have done and the things that we have preserved, and all of us, and Mr. Hager as well, all of us at City Council has played an important role in preserving these wonderful buildings and have adapted them for reuse. And it's great because we really can tell our story of our city, and much to be proud of. And I think that some of us might even tear up after we see the video. So if you will play the video for us, and thank you very much for our time, and thank you very much for Preservation Dallas for the award.
The city of Dallas owns more than just a few significant historic gems. The Hall of State at Fair Park, the Goyer House at the Arboretum, Dallas Heritage Village, Salmon Center for the Arts, the Kalita Humphreys Theater. But the city itself is not in the business of fixing up old buildings. So why are they working to help preserve our edificial past? A simple answer: because it is these places that reveal and document our common history. They are what unites the past, present, and future. Unlike mere decoration and design, these places are part of our family archive, from which the story of Dallas unfolds. We know that Dallas is a great place to live and work because of the business, the shopping, the dining, the neighborhoods and parks, the recreation, the incredible culture. These places, these destinations, these edifices are what define us as a city. They are an expression of our shared experiences. Preservation is a conscious choice, a decision-making process where we determine what to keep to inform and enrich our future, and then we work to hang on to it. What you may not know is that the Parks and Recreation Department has won more than 16 local historic preservation awards, 10 state preservation awards, and one historic preservation award from the National Trust for Historic Preservation. That Fair Park, the site of the 1936 Texas Centennial and World's Fair, represents the nation's largest collection of Art Deco exhibition buildings and is recognized as such as a National Historic Landmark. That the revitalization of our central business district is almost entirely rehabilitated historic buildings. While many may believe that Dallas does not value historic preservation, the proof is in the bricks and mortar projects that the city owns. The parks it works to preserve, the unique resources such as the Historic Preservation Department, City Archivist, and the Texas Dallas History and Archives Division at the Dallas Public Library, as well as the targeted programs such as the Historic Preservation Tax Abatement, the TIF District, and the forward-thinking options such as the use of EB-5 Visa Program to fund difficult redevelopment efforts, an approach that is only beginning to catch on nationwide. It is the city's stewardship, its highly sought-after resources, and its vision that fuel the vibrant and lively neighborhoods. The beauty of our preserved parks, the phenomenal entertainment and recreational centers, and the rebounding central business district. It is the conscious decision to preserve the relevance of the past and to create a new relevance for our futures. In this context, Preservation Dallas is pleased to recognize the extraordinary achievements of our city with this special tribute. Indeed, we are very much looking forward to working with the City of Dallas in the continuing mission to protect, encourage, and promote the strategic development of our unique and authentic historic places so that we can ensure Dallas's evolution as a vibrant, desirable, and compelling city and destination.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Medrano, for that. It's beautiful. I wish I could have went to the event. It sounded wonderful. And I also learned what Ms. Hunt said, that preservation is economic development. I think it does make us money in the long run, so it's money well spent. Also, the last announcement I would put is at noon, we're having a press conference for LGBT Pride Month. And a reception, and Ms. Hasso has been leading that effort, so I recommend that to everybody as well. With that, Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a few announcements and making folks aware. Next Wednesday, we're going to have a press conference, and one, this is, I'm not going to get like DISD, but this is for all men. But the ladies are invited to the press conference. I want to make sure you say that. All right. C.W. Whitaker and I were walking through Walmart the other day, and it was amazing in the middle of the day how this young man and other young men were strolling through Walmart with in the middle of the day around all the seniors and shoppers. And they were going through the meat department there, and when I tell you, they shouldn't even put their pants on at all. And I'm talking about filthy underwear, and it was amazing. And when we left there, we were riding down the street, and we saw another older gentleman and another younger man and a 3-year-old kid that also had his pants down, the little baby, and his pants were just down as just as well as his big head daddy had his pants down. It is something that we as men, Mayor, will have to ask folks to, because we're moving into the summer. And this is just me. Whoever wants to join it, fine, whoever don't. But we're going to have about 500 men upstairs, and this is to the press. We're going to send a signal about respecting women and ladies and young ladies and little girls. And if we as men do not step up to the plate and get ahead of this curve, then it's going to be a mess. It is getting worse. We've had this campaign. This is nothing about, okay, here's some OPR. This is a doggone shame. And we need to do something about it. It has an impact on the image of our city. As we continue to do great things and we continue to break ground and build hotels and create enthusiasm and invite tourism and tourists and convention fields, they should not have to deal with this. And so this is the main things I'm talking about that I'm asking for a press conference for next Wednesday at noon. And we've already reserved the flag room for that. I want to also say to all of the councils, we had a fantastic time these past 2 weeks in our individual council district with the National Guard. The National Guard came here. They tore down structures, not in District 4 alone. We tore down probably more, Ms. Madrona, in your district than anywhere. But if you go over to Cadillac Heights now, you will see beautiful, beautiful greenery, because those terrible structures that you've been working so hard on as well are now gone. We've went into District 4, District 5, District 8, District 7, District 2, and I think we even got one out that we went into District 6. We went into District 3, I believe, in West Dallas. So it's not a program that was just limited to one district. It was for the entire city. So I want to salute the National Guard and to say we're looking forward in bringing back that program. And I want to salute Tom Perkins and the city attorney's office and Daniel everyone, Jose and Kelsey, everyone that had something to do with bringing that. But Mayor, I want to salute you because it was a part of our Grow South initiative. And again, we put those numbers on top of the numbers that you promised that we would have and as we move toward clearing up and cleaning up and tearing down old structures. I have a few more questions I'll ask, and I'll ask these first in private, and then if I don't get some resolved, then I'll come back and ask them in public. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Garraway. Ms. L.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Garraway, thank you for taking up the mantle of having young men respect themselves. You put it in a way of respecting other people, but first they've got to respect themselves. And a part of that is indeed the way they dress and carry themselves. And the reason I wanted to speak is, as all of you know, my private business is the practice of law. At least 50% of my practice is criminal defense. Down at the jail, well over 40% of the people in that jail are young African-American males who have never been taught to respect themselves, and therefore they don't understand that they can be better than what they are sitting in Loose Derrick Jail. It begins with carrying yourself well. Even if you don't have an expensive suit, if you have a clean t-shirt, you can put that on and respect yourself. Mr. Carraway, continue in that campaign and continue to help us improve the quality of all of our lives by improving the quality of the lives of young men. Thank you, Mr. Carraway. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Hill. Ms. Rios. Oh, this is Mr. Allen.
Hey, Councilman Carraway, you beat this drum ever really since you've been on council, and it's a good drum to beat, and I'll be standing beside you next Wednesday.
Thank you. Ms. Rios.
Good morning. We're going to begin with your speakers this morning, Bernard Purdy, Mr. Diablo, Kathy Zwerneman, Peter Stone, and Jerry Russell. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant at Arms is so directed by the presiding officer. And the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please allow the next individual their turn. You will address your comments to Mayor Rawlings. Your first speaker is Bernard Purdy. Please state your name and address for the record, sir.
Bernard Bruce Purdy. I reside at 3130 Stagg Road, Dallas, Texas, 75241.
Yeah. Would you move the mic up closer to your mouth, sir, so we can hear you? Thank you. Sorry, it's a little low for tall people.
I can bend down a little bit.
Thank you.
As far as that timer she's talking about on the wall, Mr. Mayor, I won't be able to see it. I'm legally blind. So.
Okay, well, just go ahead and talk, and I'll cut you off if it's appropriate. But tell us what you have to say.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Mayor and City Council members. I appreciate being here. I wanted to relate to you an incident that occurred to me, occurred against me at a local bank on the 10th of last month. I arrived at this bank after getting off the DART bus, walked to the door to cash a couple of checks that had been written to me on that bank, Prosperity Bank. The door was locked, and it was about 3:15 in the afternoon. I looked at my phone. It was only 3:15. They say the hours of the bank is at 4 o'clock. They're closed. So after not being able to enter the bank through the front door, I begin to walk around the building. I end up walking through the drive-through lane. I become face-to-face with the lady on the inside at the drive-through. She asked, what could she do for me? I explained to her I had a couple checks that I needed to cash that was drawn on their bank. She asked to put the checks in the tray and give her my ID. She began to process the checks while I'm standing outside through the drive-thru, and I asked her, is there any reason I can't enter the bank and complete this transaction? She said, well, when you walked up to the door, you had the sunglasses on and the same shoulder bag that I have here today. We thought you was coming to rob us. I stood outside for approximately 20 minutes for this transaction to be completed. After they had my ID and the checks inside the bank, it should have been at a point then they realized that I was there when you did them a business and was not there to rob them. I still was not invited inside the bank. I feel that not only did they discriminate against me, but I think they racially profiled me. I didn't go there to rob the bank. I wear sunglasses because I'm legally blind. I have a shoulder bag. I'm dressed the exact same way that I was dressed that day. Same shirt, same everything. This is how I looked. And they denied me access to that bank. And on Monday, we are holding a peaceful demonstration at one of their locations. I think it's wrong.
Thank you for that story and that insight. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it. Mr. Atkins?
Yes. Thank you, Bernard. And is Beverly Davis here? Beverly, would you get with him? And thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pertee.
Next.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Mr. Diablo. Not present. Kathy Zorneman. Please state your name and address for the record.
Kathy Zorneman, 3257 Lancelot, Dallas, 75229. Mayor Rollins and members of the council, thank you for giving me this opportunity to discuss my concerns about oil and gas drilling within the city of Dallas. I prefer to stand here and just tell you to say no to allowing drilling within the city, but that unfortunately does not appear to be the option on the table. Therefore, it is your responsibility to ensure that the citizens of Dallas and the industry can safely coexist. On May 16th, you were briefed by the City Oil and Gas Task Force and received their recommendations. While the task force did an admirable job, and although those recommendations go a long way in protecting the citizens of Dallas, I think they need to be stronger in several areas. Number one, setbacks. The task force recommendation of 1,000 feet from the edge of a drilling pad site to the property line of homes, churches, schools, and retail sites is not enough. I ask that you consider a required setback of 3,000 feet, regardless of what structure is near, and to allow no variances to that ordinance. You will recall that just a few weeks ago, the Corps of Engineers stated its concern about the integrity of the Trinity River levee system if fracking is allowed within a 3,000-foot setback. My question is, shouldn't there be that same concern about the integrity of the foundations beneath any structures within the same 3,000-foot setback? Another issue is water. During this drought, is it right that I am living under water restrictions while the gas companies are being allowed to use millions of gallons of precious drinking water for fracking with no restrictions? A third concern is air. Dallas is committed to cleaning up the air we breathe, yet fracking operations contribute greatly to the bad air situation. The city must require this industry to follow the same guidelines as other polluting industries, as well as to purchase carbon offsets to help balance out the negative effect on the air we breathe. Parkland and floodplains is number four. I urge you to say no to drilling in parkland and in floodplains. Even if that particular piece of parkland is not currently in use as a park or a playground. And these areas should also be off limits to any of the infrastructure associated with drilling. How can I visit a park for relaxation and recreation if I'm doing that next to a drilling operation site? Other issues I don't have time to discuss today, I hope you will look into, is noise. Constant 24/7 noise levels from diesel engines at compression stations at levels that could cause hearing loss. Additional traffic and damage to roadways from heavy equipment and trucks. And industry oversight. Who is going to make sure that the best practices are being used? The bottom line is that allowing drilling operations within the city of Dallas should not negatively affect its citizens, I urge you to research each of these issues and pass ordinances that will keep each of us safe. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Peter Stone. Mr. Stone will be followed by Jerry Russell and Dave Jones.
Hi, thank you very much. My name is Peter Stone, and I live at 8611 LeBron Avenue, Dallas, 75209. I'm here today to speak about allowing health food and nutrient products and vending machines in some of our Dallas parks. I frequent the Dallas parks. They're fantastic. They're vibrant, full of the youth, athletes, families, people walking their dogs, and yet I don't see the nutrients and the health food vending machines that are required sometimes in order to help someone in need. Me, for example, I play a lot of tennis out at Cole Park in Uptown Dallas, and yes, I'll bring a Gatorade, but you know it's 100 degrees here, and it's just going to keep getting hotter and hotter, and yet there's many times where I might forget some sunblock, or I mean, even if a child is out in the park with their family at a picnic, if they don't have sunblock, I believe that some essential products should be allowed in our Dallas parks just to make them all the much better. I really do. So I'd ask you to review section 32-10 of the City Council Code. I've already spoken with the Park and Recreation Department about this, and it would make the parks all that much better and a great city, our great city of Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Russell.
I'm sorry.
The next speaker?
Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
I'm sorry.
Great point. Thank you, sir, for bringing that up. And can we get, Paul, can you respond to this and you don't have to respond now, but I'd like you to put together something. I think that's a great suggestion. I've been at the park myself where I wish I'd had sunblock or, you know, something more nutritious to drink than a soda, and I just think that's a really smart idea. Maybe we could brief that to the Quality of Life Committee. Paul, did you catch that? Okay, thank you. Thank
so
you.
Can we get maybe someone from the Park Department that can get with Mr. Stone before he leaves?
That'd be great.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stone. Sorry.
The next speaker is Jerry Russell. Jerry Russell? Not present. Dave Jones? Dave Jones is not present. Sandra Crenshaw? You may proceed.
Yes. African-American activists, business owners, and black property owners have sought to meet with you, Mayor Rollins, for 9 months. You leave us little choice but to try to communicate our concerns to you on public record before the media and the Department of Justice. I have first-hand knowledge, Mr. Mayor, that African-American leaders met with you about Kathy Neely and Willis Johnson before you hired them, and yet you claim no knowledge of the pay-to-play in the southern sector. Further, Carol Reed and others have testified about Ms. Neely. Ms. Neely laid the whole scheme out, Mr. Mayor, in the former Mayor Pro Tem's trials that were also part of public record. Prosecution, Mr. Mayor, is a deterrent, or should be a deterrent, to public corruption. Your leadership style for the last 9 months has thrown money away and then PR it away. You knew that Tennille Atkins is involved in the Inland Port public corruption, and yet you make him your mayor pro tem and ask us to look the other way. My people cried out about mistreatment at a Korean store in South Dallas. You say this is bad for Grow South, so just throw some money, a scholarship or two, and make this go away. You threw dirt at a groundbreaking for a Korean-owned store, beer store, in the face of the only African-American owned and operated beer store in Oak Cliff, been there since 1958 as a gas station. And yet, you then tell us that this is going to be, that this beer and wine store is going to spur on economic development. You go on, Mr. Mayor, in redistricting. You said on television that you were for four districts, but yet you promoted maps that only reduced two. So in summation, Mr. Mayor, you lie.
Thank you, Ms. Crenshaw.
That concludes your speakers this morning, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, please move to the next item.
Okay. We move now to approval of minutes of the May 16, 2012 City Council meeting and to correct the minutes of the February 1, 2012 and May 9, 2012 City Council meetings. Those minutes will be modified to reflect that Councilmember Davis was absent on city business on February 1 and that Councilmember Margolin was absent on city business on May 9.
We have a motion and second. Any discussion edits? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Number two is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. For individual appointment to the Animal Shelter Commission, Julie A. Cassidy, of general public qualification, is nominated by Councilmember Davis. To the Community Development Commission, John Hazelton is nominated by Councilmember Margolin. For full council appointment to the Employees Retirement Fund Board of Trustees, Councilmember Carolyn Davis is nominated by Mayor Rawlings. As a chair nominee by Mayor Rawlings, Elizabeth D. Frizzell for the Judicial Nominating Commission, and as vice chair nominated by Mayor Rawlings to the Judicial Nominating Commission is Gary Sibley. Those are your nominees this morning.
Motion approved. We have a second. We have a discussion. Ms. Hunt.
Mayor, would it be possible to table this vote until this afternoon or later in the meeting?
It would be possible. Is that is anybody got any issues with that?
I think Co-Chair Delia Paso and I would like the chance to talk with the mayor.
Okay.
All of them? Just the judicial.
Yeah, the judicial chair and the vice chair. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. So, please, Ms. Davis.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she's saying. Okay. So let's just clarify. So I think we need to have a motion to withdraw, or someone needs to withdraw the motion to approve as is. Ms. Hell, do you want to do that, or do you want to leave your motion on the table? Yeah. Okay, and not the judicial. Okay. Do you accept that, Ms. Hill? Substitute motion. Okay, we have a second. Do we have a second? We have a second. Okay, so we'll ask Ms. Davis to step out for conflict. Okay, let's... I'm trying to figure out what we're doing now. So we're voting on your motion to vote on everything except for the judicial. Okay. We haven't taken it because it was a substitute motion. Okay. Okay. All right. So let's. I got that. I'm asking a procedural question to make sure that we are getting this correct.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Basically, the substitute motion is asking that the appointment for full council and individual nominees proceed, and that the judicial nominating nominees be held.
So we will now vote on the substitute motion.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And for the record, Ms. Davis has stepped out. So all in favor of the substitute motion, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed?
Aye.
nay. We've got two voting against that. So now we will vote on those folks. Okay?
That is the vote, Mr. Mayor. We can proceed to the next item.
Fine.
Thank you. Item number three.
That's what I thought. That's right. Now we need to vote on everybody. We voted on a substitute motion. Okay? So now we need to take a motion. Now we need to take a vote on everybody on that you just read, Ms. Rios, except for the two judicial. Okay?
Mr. Mayor, my understanding was the motion to go ahead and appoint the full and the individual.
No,
nominee.
The motion was to vote. The motion was to take a vote.
Separate the vote.
To separate the
Thank
vote.
You.
Okay? So that's what we've voted on.
Thank you.
All right. So, do we have a motion to approve everybody that was read except for the judicial?
Second.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So those have been approved. I will have a discussion with, I guess, the chairs of the judicial, and we'll bring that back up this afternoon. Okay. I will get back with you and let you know on that. Let me understand what their questions are, and if we need to have a little meeting on that, we will. Okay.
We proceed now to item number three, Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Thank you. Item number three is consideration and appointment of three members to the Dallas Area Rapid Transit Board of Directors, two appointees to serve terms to expire June 30, 2014, and one to serve an unexpired term to expire June 30, 2013, and that would be for place three.
Thank you. I put together an ad hoc committee to consider the recommendation to this council for these directors. Ms. Coop is the chair of that. Ms. Coop, would you give us an update?
You bet. I'd like to report out, Mr. Mayor. Our committee met with council members Grayson, Alonzo, Davis, Medrano, Atkins, Coop, and Kadane, all being present. We spent about two and a half hours going over the four nominees for the ad hoc for the DART board appointment. We then ranked the nominees, with the number one ranking being the highest ranking. The ranking order was Robert Strauss, Richard Carrizales, James Adams, and Martin McDonald. There are three positions that are vacant. One position, which is was vacated just recently by board member Scott Carlson, has about a year left on their term, his term. The committee discussed how we would decide which appointees got which appointees got the longer terms and which one got the shorter terms. We decided to simply go by ranking. So Mr. Strauss, who got the number one ranking, would get a two-year term. Mr. Carrizales, who got the second ranking, would get a two-year term, and Mr. Adams would get the one-year term. So with that, I would like to move the following motion. That's okay. I move the ad hoc DART Board Appointment Committee's two highest-ranked nominees, Robert Strauss and Richard Carrizales, be appointed to the DART Board for a term to begin July 1, 2012, and expire June 30, 2014. Additionally, I move the ad hoc DART Board Appointment Committee's third highest-ranked nominee, James F. Adams, be appointed to the DART Board, place three, to fill the unexpired term, which will expire June 30th, 2013.
Okay. We got a motion and second. Any discussion?
I have one discussion.
Yes.
I would like to also thank our nominee who did not is not being given a position. This young man, Douglas McDonald, made a very big impression on the committee. He gave an excellent interview. I mean, really, thank you, Scott, for bringing him forward. He was a very intelligent, very thoughtful in his words. This young man was really a star. And, you know, I can talk offline about what his background is, but he's got a very wonderful background for another board position with the City of Dallas. So we want to thank him. He said he was young and he was a little bit nervous, but I really didn't see that he was nervous. He really was well-spoken. So we'd like to keep him in the hopper. Those of us who were there at the meeting, you know, you have him on your radar screen. Thank you, Council Member Briggs, for bringing him.
How old is
he? I'm not. He's in his late 20s. Somewhere.
Somebody has a vacancy.
Yeah, somebody has a vacancy. He's got...
Mr. Coop? Miss, was just that one? Is Miss Coop there?
Yes. Also, my council member reminds me, I want to thank Jerry Allen for being there. Thank you, Jerry, for coming. And he participated the whole time. And the mayor also attended. Thank you, Mayor, for coming as well.
Thank you. Miss Davis.
And the Mr. Martin, who I was thoroughly impressed with. He lives here in the city of Dallas. He just happened to work in Irving, Arlington. But he has an extremely, his resume was extremely well, had a lot of experience in his resume. So I think he had a lot of guts to come, and he did. I think he did quite well on his performance. So I think he's an up and coming spot. So he was very, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. I will remind everybody that my definition of diversity is broad, and it also includes young people. Okay? All right? And just as we think about diversity, having youth is not always a bad thing. Okay? And having old people is not always a bad thing. So, okay. Any other question? Ms. Kerwick? Did you? Okay. Yeah. Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you. Thank you for those items. I would ask to go ahead with this, the local preference,
yes,
very quick.
Mike Frost is going to give that presentation this morning.
Okay, let's go ahead. At least we can see how far we get with this presentation, okay, so we can use the time. What we're going to do, I made a change because of a couple things that happened last hour. We're going to have the executive session at 12:30. At 12:30, okay, once we adjourn here at 11. Yeah. Yes, Mike.
Good morning. Mike Frosch. I'm the Director of Business Development for Kemper Services. We're here today to seek council approval to amend Chapter 2 of the Dallas City Code to provide a preference may be given to a local business in awarding city contracts under certain circumstances. We also want to discuss the potential of raising the limits when a contract must be competitively bid. And we also want to discuss a settlement authority provided to the city attorney's office. Today, we're going to discuss the background of local preference, and we're going to discuss the exemptions to local bid preference, and also discuss the Chapter 2 changes. In the summer of 2011, there were two House bills that were passed in legislative sessions. The first one, House Bill 1869, allowed for local preference when you purchase goods, specifically goods such as vehicles, office supplies, anything that's a tangible good. So it allows only in the area of goods to have a 3% local preference. And the House Bill 628 passed and included goods up to 5%. And it also has, that added the general service definition, and it also had a construction definition of less than 100,000. So House Bill 628 encompasses the goods, general services, and construction services. So a little more definition on the House Bill 1869. It provides a preference if you have a local business that's competing. We define local in the city of Dallas. We've put in here the local would be the principal place of business within the city. So within the city limits, not the county. So that would be a city of Dallas business. And if they were meeting the threshold, they would, well, one thing to point out on House Bill 1869, there's no threshold. Go back to page 5, please. So there's no threshold. There's no ceiling on that preference on House Bill 1869. So any procurement for goods, if this body decided to have a preference, it would be allowed under the state statute. On page 6, House Bill 628, as I mentioned earlier, encompasses goods, general services, such as exterminating services, security services, janitorial services, and House Bill 628 actually has a 5% threshold. So if this body decided to have a 5% threshold, you could in goods, general services, and later we'll talk about facility construction. On 7, I tried to give you an example of if we decided to move forward with a preference, and looking at this chart, in bidders B and C, they would be local bidders that we would define by City of Dallas businesses. In a normal low bid situation, the base bid of $251,000 would be brought forward for council consideration. Using a 5% preference, assuming that we were using the House Bill 628 on general services or goods up to $500,000, we would simply do the math for the local bidders to allow that preference. And as you can see, with the 5% on this example, your $260,000 local City of Dallas bidder would be brought forward for council consideration. House Bill 628 also encompasses facility construction and construction services up to $100,000. That's a really low threshold, so for all intents and purposes, most of our construction jobs are over $100,000, so it's not going to be a real huge impact to our construction or facility construction services. But the House Bill also does allow this preference, you know, if there's a local business competing with people from the outside up to $100,000. I have the same similar example as previously for the construction. As you can see on sample bidders, C and D are local bidders. They would be defined as City of Dallas, principal place of business. And the outside of Dallas bidders, low bid would be $60,000 if you use the math for the 5%. In this case, sample bidder C would be a local business that we would bring forward for council consideration. So kind of a summary, because you had two different House bills that were passed, and basically giving you preferences, kind of a summary of those two House bills side by side. The reason we have no preference and 0 to $50,000, the state statute begins with competitive bids, and that starts at $50,000 as of 2007. So there's no preference under $50,000 because those are considered informal bids by state statutes. So when you look at the columns for goods for House Bill 1869, that has a preference of 3%, and it's unlimited, so it would go on it, and that's why we have it in $500,000 and plus. And then the House Bill 628, there's no preference for under 50 because it's informal, and your preference stops with $500,000. So you have, if you were to use the 5% preference as an example in the goods category on House Bill 628 and you carried that forward, it would have to stop at the $500,000 ceiling. And then obviously on the construction, the last column, construction would stop at $100,000, so that's a very nominal change there. On slide 11, just for discussion's sake, and it's obviously the council's at the will of council, to standardize the preference if we decide to move forward, for consistency, we've used 5% on goods up to $500,000, and then we went back to House Bill 1869 and picked up the goods above $500,000 with 3% preference. So, in essence, you have the goods in definite 5% to $500,000, and then after $500,000, we pick up at a 3%, and then general services, you would not have any preference above $500,000. So, any general services, exterminating janitorial up to $500,000, you would apply a 5% preference. And then construction services would be 5% only up to $100,000. That's what's allowed by statute. It's important to note that the local preference option is a determination the city council must determine. So we would bring forward if they met the definition of local business and they had a principal place of business in the City of Dallas, and it is the best combination of price and economic development benefits, then we would bring that forward for your consideration. We would bring that forward in the subject and tell you, this body, that it's not a low bid, that, and I have an example that we'll go through in just a minute, but we're going to tell you that was using the local preference, and we would define the local, what the economic benefits were to this body before we would recommend it. So we'd recommend it to you and say we're using local preference, and we'd tell you that either it's job creation, job retention, or tax benefits. So we'd bring that forward on a case-by-case situation, and so you'd make that decision on an individual basis. There's some exemptions to local preference. What it's not, it does not cover professional services, architect engineering services, construction services above $100,000, and it's only for low bid contracts. So that it's not negotiated contracts. It's not proposals that have evaluation criterion. It's only for a low bid contract. Federal grants, that you cannot use this for any federal grant funds, sole source, proprietary, emergencies, of course, those are outside of this statute, and cooperative agreements because you're using another term, another entity's terms and technology. We kind of put an internal test if we decide to move forward. First of all, is the procurement a competitive bid? So is it negotiated or a low bid? Is the lowest bidder on its own not the local vendor? And then obviously we would ensure that the principal place of business within Dallas and was it within the thresholds that we have defined in the draft ordinance. And often the most important thing here is just to provide an economic benefit to the city. So we look at those in a case-by-case situation. We would leverage the internal expertise with economic development to look at that before we bring this to this body to determine if it really truly is an economic benefit and for the value and the difference in those bid submissions. And other cities, Houston jumped out with Houston Hire First, and they jumped out early on this legislative change. And we looked at El Paso, Houston, Austin, and some other cities to see how they were going to apply this. And Houston's using a let all the vendors sign up type approach. What we plan on doing is have an affidavit that would be filled out with the bid submission saying that it applies. Does it apply? Do you have a local business here in the city of Dallas? And tell us, the city, how they meet this definition by state law. And then they would tell us what they feel the economic benefits to the city, and we would take that and validate that before we brought that back to this council for a recommendation. On page 15, I talked about the subject wording, so we brought this forward to you. The second bullet kind of tells you how we bring it forward. We would say that we're authorizing a contract utilizing a local preference option, and then we would stipulate in the background the AIS that we would tell you the reasons why we feel that it benefits the city of Dallas. Your recommendation. So a key definition we spoke of earlier, local business. We defined it as the city of Dallas, and it is the city of Dallas. The second key part of this is the principal place of business, and it's not defined by statute. So, working with the city attorney's office, we came up with a definition that we can discuss, and if we have any changes, we can discuss that. At the headquarters or primary executive or administrative office within the city of Dallas, an established office, plant, store, warehouse, such. What we're trying to say is not going to be a post office box, drop box. It has to be a substantial presence in the city of Dallas before we consider it to be a principal place of business. After the discussion today and the direction from the council, we would definitely go out and, depending on if it's favorable or not, we would go out and educate the vending community, especially on how we're going to define the local preference, the principal place of business, and how the economic benefits have to be defined when they submit their proposal or their bids to the city of Dallas. So that would be an aggressive education and informational sessions before we would move this forward. So in summary, implementing a local preference option provides an opportunity for the city to encourage businesses to continue to do business with the city. And part of one of the major responsibilities of my office is to recruit vendors to come in, and using our procurement power, we think that we could, having a local preference would give us an option to bring in additional competitive bids, which ultimately would drive down the cost of the goods and services for the city of Dallas. Of course, we would provide tracking to see how if this made an impact in the future. We've looked back for 12 to 18 months, and if we looked at implementing a 5% local preference, we had two cases that we would have actually had an impact, and we have all the agenda items you pass on an annual basis. That's a very small number. It doesn't mean that it won't change by bringing this local preference forward. We think it's a good tool to help us recruit and retain local businesses. But we would track that and provide this council with a report on an annual basis if we decided to move forward. And I'll pause here before we move into the threshold changes and field questions.
Let's pause here. What do you mean threshold changes?
We have the first part talking about local preference, and our second part talking about Chapter 2 changes.
Let's pause here, okay? I'm going to adjourn at this, a recess at this point. I think there are some questions on this issue. We want to take the time to do this, so we're going to recess at this point, and then we will reconvene at 12:30 here for executive session, and then try to pick up at 1 o'clock this discussion, and then spend the first part of the afternoon doing that, and then we'll move into the bond. Okay? Thank you very much, and we are in recess. Thank you. All right, it's 1:01 p.m. We are reconvening on the council briefing of June 6th. For the record, we have not gone into executive session. I didn't read it that we had anyway, so we will announce that at the right time. We are modifying the order of this afternoon. We'll take up the action that we deferred from this morning at this time. Then we'll immediately go into the 2012 bond program manager recommendations, and then we will pick up the discussion from briefing B on local preference and contract limitations at that time. Ms. Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor, I understand from the City Attorney and City Secretary that we will be voting solely on the Vice Chair of the Judicial Nominating Commission?
Correct.
And with that, Mr. Mayor, I move to approve.
Okay. We've got a motion and a second on the item that was raised, and that is, Ms. Rios, you want to just clarify, this is just on the Vice Chair.
Yes. On the chair could be appointed by the mayor. It does not require affirmation by the city council. So the council is considering strictly the nomination and appointment of the vice chair.
Okay, so we've got a motion and a second. Any discussion? None? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you, and let us assume you want to...
Sorry.
For the record, if anybody's seeing this, we've all had a busy lunch, and some people are grabbing a little nutrition in the interim. Joe? Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Well, we're pleased to be here. This is the unveiling of the 2012 bond program. This is the version that is the city manager's recommended version, and from here you all will make adjustments to it. On slide 3, just to kind of reiterate where we are, this is the city manager's recommended bond program. What will happen is we'll do public comment, and you all have been kind enough to work with us on scheduling meetings throughout the month of June. In August, we'll come back together. You all will be able to make amendments to the bond program at that time. We'll call the election, and the election is in November. Moving on, if I could turn the page. So how did we get projects to include on the bond program? Well, you all know we have the needs inventory. We got citizen input. We talked to homeowner associations and business associations. They sent in ideas. You all gave us ideas. So lots of ideas coming, a lot more projects than we have money for, and so that's what we've been doing, is looking at those projects and to put them on, to decide which ones we're going to recommend. On slide 5, what we're talking about is a $600 million bond program, 3 propositions. The first one, streets at $221 million, flood drainage and erosion projects at $324 million, and economic development at $55 million. So I'd like to talk about each proposition and how we came up with it, what our philosophy was, and begin with the street proposition. We have things that we need to take care of. We've got to repair the Houston Street Bridge, the sidewalk project, the 50-50 program that we have. This bond program has money in there for that. A big driver for the bond program is meeting the council goal of having our streets in satisfactory condition. Another big driver was leveraging funds from both citizens through petition projects and also intergovernmental projects. This bond program was also trying to encourage multimodal transportation, trails and complete streets in the streetcar project. And we're trying to also promote economic development through the street proposition, again looking at thoroughfares and complete streets and other kind of projects that foster economic development. Now the next slide gives you a summary of the street proposition by type of project. We've got three projects that we're calling citywide, the sidewalk repairs that can be done in all districts, the West Dallas Gateway Project, Houston Street Bridge projects, because they affect so much of the city, and then the rest of the projects are types, whether they're alley petition, alley reconstruction, arterials, our big streets, or residential streets. We also have trail projects on this bond program. Now on slide 8, we recap, if you will, the status of our streets in terms of are they in satisfactory condition. The top line gives you the percent in satisfactory condition by each council district. The next one is the percent in unsatisfactory condition, which is just a subtraction problem right there. Then the lane miles in each of your districts. And then the next line talks about how many lane miles do we need to do on this bond program to maintain our goal. And then the final one is then how well did we do against that. And so these are the lane miles in each of your council districts that count towards maintaining satisfactory condition. Now on slide 9, this is another summary slide, again showing you the amount of money proposed for each district for streets and drainage. And you will see that what we've attempted to do is, using both of those together, balance them and come up with roughly $13 million per district being spent between those two propositions. Now on slide 10, this is another summary slide, again showing you more specifically each type of project on the street proposition by council district. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about trails. Trails, being a multimodal form of transportation, not just cars, but we can handle bikes on the street proposition, and so trails do appear on the street proposition. And we've got six of them that are proposed for the bond program. And you can see that they've got a geographic spread across the city. All total, it's about 15 miles of trails being added to our network. The next slide, 12, we also took a look as we looked at each street project to see, is it on the bike plan? And if it is, then we included costs to get it on the bike plan. So the whatever is needed for that, so the striping, signage, that kind of thing. So all total between the bike plan work and the trails, we'll be adding 47 miles of bike-related facilities as a part of this bond program. Slide 13 talks about the Houston Street Bridge project. The bridge itself needs some repair work to the kind of the foundations of the bridge to make sure it stays safe. In addition, we have the project of putting the streetcar on there, and the bridge needs additional modification. Again, that's a little over $12 million going towards Houston Street. On slide 14, the West Dallas Gateway Project, we've got the Union Pacific Railroad that basically serves to divide this community. And so this project is punching holes through there so that cars can get underneath that railroad and open this area up for development and commerce really on both sides of the railroad there. This area is really expected to grow. You can see the numbers in the briefing. And so this is really leveraging private development. Now on slide 15, as we talk about what again was our philosophy, again, maintaining street satisfaction, helping economic development, leveraging and maximizing matching funds, we're going to be adding 6 miles of complete streets We are looking at alley reconstruction and sidewalk repairs, adding to the trail networks and on-street bike lanes. So a lot is being accomplished in the street proposition. Now turning our attention to the flood erosion control and drainage proposition. Again, this one is about saving lives and preventing property loss. We have the big projects that you all have, we've talked to you about previously, Mill Creek, Peaks Branch, St. Thomas, the big tunnel job there. Also taking care of the Able pump station and also erosion along the creek. Slide 17 is a summary. At this point, we've got about over 50 erosion control projects. We coordinated with the Park Department because not only do we need to protect private property and cities' bridges, but we also have park facilities that were endangered by erosion, and so we did coordinate with the Park Department, and we do have some erosion control jobs in city parks. The Upper McCamey Bypass Swale, this is a drainage project that we've been working on up in District 12 for some time. It needs additional funding, and this will take care of that. And then the Bahama Relief System is in District 3. On the next slide, it shows you the summary of the erosion projects and the two small drainage relief systems by council districts. There are a couple of districts that have nothing here for erosion control. Instead, all of their money is on the street proposition. But between the two propositions, each council district is getting roughly the same. Now, on slide 19 is a repeat of the Mill Creek and Peaks Branch. We've got $1.1 billion in tax base in the floodplain of this of these creeks. These creeks were running basically from Mockingbird down towards the Trinity and White Rock Creek. They were enclosed back in the 20s and 50s in two-year systems or five-year systems. Basically, you have rivers running through the streets after a rain. We've got 3,800 properties in the floodplain that are impacted by this. Flood depths are up to 10 feet high in city streets. The next slide, on slide 20, shows you the areas that are inundated by these floodwaters. The one on the left shows you the areas that are flooded out, where structures are in danger and the driving public is endangered. On the right-hand side, the gray areas, this is what comes out and is no longer subject to this level of flooding. And so you have areas ranging from down by Vickery Park, our new Museum of Nature and Science, Farmers Market, Baylor Hospital, Fair Park. So lots of key areas that all of us around the city use would be benefited by this project. The next slide, Able Pump Station, 135 structures would be removed from the 100-year flooding resulting from an inadequate pump station. It opens up 50 acres for economic development, and this pump station will triple in its pumping size. The next slide shows you the area that is currently inundated because of the inadequacy of the Able Pump Station, and then on the right-hand side you can see that with the new pump station we can find the water to the sumps, which is where the water is supposed to be. In summary on the erosion and flood and drainage proposition, again, this is all about public safety, protecting property, it's trying to deal with the undersized Able pump station and dealing with erosion control for single-family homes and city assets. Now turning our attention to economic development, here what we're trying to do is to help develop new tax base by helping developers as they come in the door. We've got about $5 million that we're planning to use in the UNT area to help with transit-oriented development. The Canyon Boulevard project, which is not the Canyon Freeway, but it is a development called the Canyon, it's over by I-30 in Westmoreland. This is punching a new thoroughfare through that land, which really opens it up to development. $10 million for that. That leaves $40 million for economic development and housing as projects come in the door. Slide 25 shows you the Canyon project and how that street connects Westmoreland to the new frontage roads on I-30, and slide 26 shows you the UNT area, and again, we're expecting development around that campus. Slide 27 deals with the upcoming schedule, so we have town hall meetings scheduled with all of you for the month of June. In August, right when we come back from the break, we'll be dealing with council deliberation, and this is where you can make your changes. And so we'll be working with you over the break to get all of your recommendations in and your wishes in. August 15th, we need to call that election, and then the election is held in November. And with that, I'd be happy to answer questions that you all may have.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Jim. I think it's a great, great comment. And the only question that I have, Jim, if we go back to the, I guess, prop, I think it was, I'm trying to think which page we had.
Thank you.
Let me find it right quick. Okay, page 5, I believe. Prop 2, flood, drain, and erosion.
Mm-hmm.
The 323, and we talk about, I think, Mill Creek location there in Abel. The question I have, I guess we'll go back a couple years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, or 4 years ago, that when we did Abel, did we defer some money?
Right. ABLE was on the 2006 bond program,
right.
And when the Corps did the periodic inspection and we had to respond to that, we basically canceled the ABLE project and used the money for it to deal with the levy issues.
So how much was it? How much was it?
So on that bond program, it was about $50, $56 million, somewhere in that range.
So it was $56 million, and now to do ABLE, how much does it cost to do ABLE?
It's costing around $90. And
at that time, was there an increase in cost between 2006 and now?
Right. We've had inflation working against us. Also, we've increased the pump station size, and we've done a better job of looking at all of the connections. That sump is an odd one because it has a series of lakes that are cut off by different roads, and we need to work on the culverts between them. So we've added that cost in as well.
You know, that amount of money we had in that bond program would not be enough to do what we're doing now. We've added some more work to that particular project.
And if you go back to your stormwater fees that we had, that at one time we said all stormwater fees would go to flood and repair a drainage system. At that time, stormwater fees, do you know how much money that we collect in stormwater fees that went to the flood and drainage?
Well, when the Corps gave us the periodic inspection, we raised the fees at that time to deal with increase in O&M expenses. And we had a spike up because we had to deal with the vegetation issue behind the levees. And we basically, from where we were to where we are now, it's an increase in O&M expenses of a range of $4 to $5 million per year of additional maintenance that we're having to do on the floodway system.
But Mr. Atkins, we haven't committed that all of the debt for flood control would come out of stormwater.
Right.
Some of it does, but not a large portion of it.
Okay. And when we go back in the three Mill Creeks, can you remember the three of Mill Creek?
Mill Peak and State Thomas.
State Thomas. So when we have hired half an association, it was brought to our attention in 2010 that there might be a saving of roughly about $72 million in 2010 if we combine those three together.
Right, if we combine them all, and then we get an additional savings if we don't chop it up into little bitty phases, but we do basically as one big project.
So I guess the question, when did half... they brought that attention in 2010. When did we realize that in 2010 that we were going to have this saving? Because half were working on projects beyond 2010.
The way I remember
before.
Liz, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but basically when they started work on it, we realized the savings over two different time periods, one in 2008 and one in 2010. The first, back in 2006, we were going to address each creek separately. Then in 2008, we put Mill and Peak together. And in 2010, we realized, well, if we put State Thomas in with it, we'll have additional savings. So it was kind of an evolution of the idea.
Okay, now, is Hass and Associates still working, doing, I guess, are they doing the forecasts?
Yes, they're still working on the design.
Okay. When this design is complete on these three drainage systems, is there another design after that coming for this location? I know we never finished infrastructure. I'm just trying to find it out.
Yep.
Is this the phase one, the phase two, or did we look beyond that?
This design is for basically the lower half of all three watersheds. Then in a future bond program, HAF is not working on the design for the upper part of Mill and the upper part of Peak. And so a later council on a future bond program will need to then extend the system up those areas, which are residential areas, almost to Mockingbird.
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins. Ms. Margolin. What's that? You're okay? Oh, she's sorry. Mr. Caraway, then.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have one question, Mary and everybody. As we move forward, I know we put a dollar figure on this. Is there any way, do we see any light at the end of the tunnel to increase our bond capacity at all, potentially, maybe, by the time it gets there? Is it a possibility?
There's always a possibility, but where I stand right now, no.
But where we stand now, no. But it is a possibility.
Well, so, nothing's impossible.
Okay.
But I don't want you to get excited and think it'll happen, because
will. I guess where I'm going with it, if we're talking $500 million, $550 million.
$600 million.
Okay. We're talking $600 million. It could be.
It's 600 now.
Yeah, but could we get it to 650? Maybe, if things went well. And without going up on, no, we don't even talk about taxes going up. That's not even a discussion.
If there's any possible wiggle room, y'all will be the first to know, honestly.
And that's what I want to do. Because I would like to start planning a little beyond a plan B, just in case. And if we get there, then, because there's still some other things that are needed, I would want to, if there's any new money beyond $600 million, I would like to start identifying some additional potential projects and things that we should be doing. Because when it comes, and that's why I want to be on the record today, I don't want to automatically just, okay, here it is, and I was going to put $25 million over here.
I would like to have
some projects in waiting.
I will be glad to take any suggestions you have on that.
I'm giving you something to that now.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Caraway. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. First, I want to start out by saying thank you for being open to all of the suggestions you heard about, including alleys. I have lots of alleys in my allocation, and we appreciate it. Thank you. That said, I wanted to say that on slide 15, I don't consider alley reconstruction and sidewalk repairs to be special requests. I consider them to be an important part of our city's infrastructure. So I guess I just wanted to make that statement, because I think alleys are just as important as streets and sidewalks and every other type of infrastructure that we repair and maintain and construct in this city. On slide 7, could you tell me which sidewalk repairs are considered citywide?
The 1.5, those are the sidewalk repairs that could be for all of the districts. You'll see sidewalk projects, 300,000. That's in Mr. Caraway's district.
Okay, so you're saying anywhere in the city, and then how are those chosen?
That's the 50-50, and so...
That's the 50-50, so we're finding that at $1.5 million.
Right, which reflects the kind of demand that we get every year.
So that's for a five-year projected cost. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson. Ms. Davis.
Thank you so much. I would like to go to page 9. Okay, Jill, help me to understand. Down here at the bottom of the total in every council district, it might have 13.44, then it said 13.55, 3333, then jump back over to 434221. And if you, how much is that off by?
Yeah.
This is average to the closest 100,000, but, you know, every project costs a little bit different, and so that's why we get a little variance between the council districts. We were aiming for 13 million for each district.
Okay. Now, if you add all these up, is there a savings in any of this? No savings, like $300 or $400 million that's left out there or anything?
No, we took every dime.
Okay. Now, why are some district like 14, for example, is 13.1 and mine is like 13.3? Is that a different? Is it because of project?
Just how the projects fall out.
Okay. Let's go to page 26, please. Okay, I know we're talking about a TOD. Is this the only TOD we're talking about, or we're talking about promoting all the TODs?
Well, Ryan can jump in if he would like, but my understanding is we know TOD for this area. For the economic development, there's a $40 million out there that is not allocated to projects, and that is money that can go towards other TODs that come in the door.
Okay, let me ask Ryan something. Mike, can you come up, please? Ryan, and I know that we are talking about the TODs, and I look at the TIF as well, that also kind of works hand in hand with some of the TOD development. In District 7, for example, with this bond package and some of the TIF dollars that's been spent, I know I have the Park South TIF. How would that TIF work with some of the TOD in the bond?
Actually, within District 7, you have a lot of initiatives going on right now along the Green Line, as well as within the TIF itself. As you know, you've got your Spring Avenue project, you've got the Hatcher Square plans, you've got the Hall project. Right, all of these are transit-oriented around that. All of those will benefit the TIF, and the TIF will benefit them. You've also got some dollars within the proposed program itself for complete streets along Grand Avenue.
Okay.
That's within the TIF, and as those projects come online, that will benefit the TIF, which will help us fund additional projects.
Okay. And then as we do this TOD development, with the HUD dollars, were they doing the studies? I think they're doing them in... several district, council member district. How would that work long term?
Yeah, there are three different areas that HUD is studying through that particular grant. The Five Points area, the Lancaster area, as well as the Fair Park area. Mm-hmm. Once those studies are complete, as we recruit developers, the $40 million that Ms. Jordan talked about can be used to move those projects forward.
And that could be for some type of development?
For transit-oriented development, yeah.
Okay. Now, would it help towards business development, or it just would help towards the enhancement, like complete streets or something like that?
Could be both, but mainly what we're talking about within that program is vertical development for new developments.
Oh, okay. And then... thank you so much. Jill, I have one more other question. In one of the pictures, it shows on page 23, the flooding on page 23. Now, some part of, and I can only talk about my district, it might not be happening in other districts, though the sewer, when it rains, the water needs to drain somewhere.
some of that stuff is clogged up and backed up with dirt and impact and trash for over a period of years. Is there any way we can clean all of that? Would that help some?
That would help some, and that's a typical regular operating budget kind of issue. Mm-hmm. So if you'll give us the addresses where you know that's happening, we can get the staff out there to deal with it.
Okay. Now, so I just need to give the address, the location, and then we can go clean them out.
Right.
And then we also in this budget have areas where we're going to include drainage in certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I have one more other question. On page 20, Jill. How much money is going into the Neal Peart State Thomas?
It's 217, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
217 million.
Okay. And that's taken from it. Little everybody's district to make that happen.
Well, we're calling it a citywide project.
Okay.
So
mm-hmm.
We did not count it against your district or.
Okay. So we're calling it a citywide project.
Right.
Okay. And then once we, this is before pictures and this is how it's going to look after it's finished?
Yes.
And so once we do this, will we have to go back into this area again?
Well, if you'll see on the map on the right, mm-hmm. So the gray areas is where we will be drying up the streets and drying up the houses and buildings in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
But you see that there's blue going on up north towards Mockingbird for Mill and Peaks. And so a future council on a future bond program will need to work on those systems, but they won't be addressed in this project.
Okay. So future council, future bond, they will address some other issues in that
right.
area.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Mr. Cadane.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Jill, on page 10, you've got down there under District 9 Intergovernmental Partnership Trails.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I've got $2.1 million involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it all going to my district? But I only want to know why we can't spread it out.
Well,
I mean, it's for the entire city that this trail is going in. I mean, I don't understand. I'm getting the full brunt of it. Yeah, maybe it runs through my district, but these trails run all over the city.
Everybody's got trails.
Where? I'm the only one that got any.
You're the only one with another government at this point helping out on the cost of the trail, but we've got another trail in Ms. Hasso's district, in Ms. Madrano's district, District 5, Judge Hill, and Mr. Atkins' district, they are sharing a trail, and we've got a trail up in Ms.
Well,
Gracie.
I want to share mine, too.
I know.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying.
Well, so the way this is...
Oh, it does. So does mine.
No.
Yeah, but they got to use my trail to get to theirs. Amen.
But the,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was trying to get some extra money to fix a few alleys is what I'm looking for. I wasn't giving it away. I wanted to move it because, I mean, as you've seen my map, it's total red, my
yes,
alleys are.
Yes, your alleys are very
and
bad.
At some point, you know, once we have these meetings, I guess, we can make further decisions on, well, maybe we can do without that street being fixed and let's fix these few alleys.
Correct.
So that can happen, correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane. Ms. Morgolin.
Thank you. I guess another comment along those lines is that, you know, we've got huge flood control projects that are $300 million, and that counts as citywide, whereas we all have small flood control and erosion control projects, but those are district. And those people are under just as much potential danger from flooding as the people in Mill Creek. So I realize we're not going to change that, but it really is, I think, not quite fair that... that the large project is a citywide project, but the smaller projects are district projects. But that's not the main thing I want to talk about. I want to go back to economic development. And I guess that starts on slide 24. Am I missing something? Where are the numbers in this? I mean, I know you stated some numbers, but is there a chart that I'm missing, or was it just not put into the presentation?
I don't know that we put it in there.
Well, then, can you go back and review with me how many dollars were for each of the main projects?
Yes.
Also, we sent you a page that has that broken out, because at one point in this presentation we had that. I don't know how we ended up without it, but we can send you a page, too.
Okay.
You can do that, but you can have it in writing.
So it's $5 million for UNT, $10 million for the canyon, and then $40 million for economic development and housing. $5 million for the UNT area, $10 million for the canyon, and $40 million for economic development and housing.
And tell me again what the canyon is.
The canyon is a new thoroughfare that basically connects where Colorado dead ends to Westmoreland. So it connects Westmoreland to I-30. And it goes right through a very large undeveloped tract of land, opening that land up for development.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Ms. Margolin, is anyone else? Mr. Allen.
Slide 10. When did, all from day one we talked about this was going to be strictly for streets, erosion, and storm drainage, and that was where our expectations were at least mine, unless I fell asleep. When did we, when did the conversation start on trails? And I was never talked to about trails. Maybe I missed it.
Well, trails have always been a part of our streets proposition. So if we need to relook at some of your expenditures and put them into trails, basically we talked to each one of you about what your needs were and got you to help us prioritizing needs. So
I just never viewed, I guess, a trail as
it's a motor, a way for us to get around.
Yeah, in previous bond programs, trails has appeared both on the street proposition and in a park
proposition. Within the park.
So we can fund it both ways.
Okay. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Any other questions? Yes, Ms. Madrona.
Thank you, Mayor. And Mayor, I'm glad that you said that, because I know that there are some constituents out of the audience and I know that they have some projects. And yes, Jill came by to talk to us about our priorities, and we've mentioned this, that it's a matter of money as well, because the priorities, whether it was complete streets or others, they're on the list. It's just there's not enough money to do some of the projects. So I definitely don't want the audience or some of the people that are out here in the audience here present have to think that their projects weren't a priority. They are a priority. It's just we've
run out of money.
We're working on things between now and August.
Well, and I want to thank y'all for working through it with us. But it's not as much fun to do a bond program when it's, like 40% of what you worked with before. But there are critical things that have to be done here, and I appreciate your efforts with that. We hope that the economy gets better in another 3 to 4 years. We can look at another bond program. But this is just as critical as the last bond program we did, and yet it's not near as much fun to work on when you don't have much money to spend.
To build on that, sometimes Dallas gets criticized for not taking care of basics, that we spend the money on the glittery things and we don't do the basics. And I think this is clear proof that that's not the case, that we are going to be asking the citizens to step up and say the basics are important. We all have heard our needs for better and better roads. Ms. Margolin, you're my councilwoman. When I see our roads aren't as good, we need to get our roads a little bit better, okay? And Mr. Cadane, I see that that's the case in your area as well, in East Dallas. And so that's what we need to make sure we do. The second thing, I think, safety. I mean, when we talk about basics, and we're talking about, I know we as a city council never want anybody to die again because of floods, and hopefully this expenditure will take care of that. I'm excited about UNT Dallas and the TOD there and what we're doing in the canyon, because those are two important projects as we just continue to grow in southern Dallas. So this may not be glamorous, citizens, but it is about the basics, and the basics are the foundations of our city. And I believe that if we pass this, we will have a more livable city and a safer city. So thank you, Jill, for your leadership on this, and I look forward to continuing to pound through the details. Thank you. Why don't we come back to the next item, or the previous item, briefing B.
Yeah,
Ms. Margolin. All right, so when do you have the slides up? So we had, why don't you go back to the summary on that?
Slide 19, please.
Why don't you just kind of summarize again? So, because I think when we last met Batman, you just had finished.
Yes, sir.
And we need to.
I'm just going to summarize by implementing a local preference option. It will provide the city opportunities to provide local companies the ability to compete and provide increased competition within the city of Dallas residents. We have summarize some of the options that are out there for us today, and we are recommending moving forward with a local preference.
Thank you very much. And we had a couple of questions, Mr. Atkins. You didn't have it? Okay, Ms. Margolin? And we had okay. Got it.
Thank you. What would you guess is the percentage or the number of times? I mean, how often do you think this will come up?
Look back in the 18-month window. The items that we brought for council consideration, and we had two instances that would have had impact, and they were on relatively small contracts.
So this is not something that is likely to be a burden on the economic development staff for doing a lot of analysis, or, I mean, it seems like this is going to be incumbent upon them to make the recommendation. Is that right?
Right. We're going to have the responsibility from the proposer to provide the economic impact to the city, and we will do analysis internally before we bring it to council for consideration.
So when you say twice a year, or twice in that 18-month time, there may have been others that would have been looked at and then disqualified?
Yes, ma'am.
So I guess I'm just trying to make sure that this isn't going to be a big problem for economic development, that this is going to be a big responsibility added to them.
Mike, I don't think, did you look at it that
way?
Well,
no, but economic development's going to do the analysis.
I don't think we know the answer to how many would not have qualified.
Okay.
So I'm telling you this will have a small impact on their workload.
Okay.
I think it's a good thing to do. It states that what our position is on local businesses, but it's not going to have a huge impact, or we'd have had a staff impact in the briefing. So.
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure. And then another question I have is, do you think it's likely that as a result our costs on these particular contracts would be higher or lower?
Well, I think it's likely that the increased competition with the opportunities would actually drive down costs. Part of our responsibility is recruiting vendors to do business with the City of Dallas. And as you've seen items coming forward, there's not always a lot of local businesses that are in those areas. So we're hoping that this will bring incentive for people to come actually and move their business to the City of Dallas.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins finally remembered.
Getting old. I got a birthday coming up. I'm a senior. I'm like Dwayne. I'm 60 years old.
Yeah, we get you.
I'm glad procurement for the last 5 years, I've been looking at how we do preferred here in the City of Dallas, especially. Della Hanso and Monica Alonzo with us looking at procurement, how we look at that, and how do we try to build ways to have more new revenue coming to the City of Dallas, and also try a way to increase our property tax base and also increase employment in the City of Dallas. I think there are three goal opportunities, with goods, service, and construction. But how do you get that? And when you have other companies come to the City of Dallas and they have a P.O. box or just one-man operation, and they take that revenue and go away. And we made up with so many small businesses, and the small business end up going bankrupt and going out of business, and we lose the property tax value, and we also lose the revenue. So I think this is a good starting point, looking at the goods and the service construction. But I think that, how to qualify. If you go to, I think, slide 12, I believe. When using this right here, I think they're saying in this local bid, when using local preference, the city council must determine. I think that's kind of more going to be like a case-by-case situation. How do we do that as we go forward? And I think this is going to be a trial and error. And how do we educate? How do we put the advertising out there to let our local business, who are already in business, that this is another tool we got in a toolbox? So I think it's very important that we reach out through procurement and through everybody and say, hey, we got a good growing opportunity. And we also said those small business, one that the mayor was talking about and economic development talking about, we made up with a whole lot of small business who said we cannot compete with the big people who is coming inside the City of Dallas. I know you're talking about Houston, Texas. I went down and visited Houston and Austin and El Paso, and Houston was the first one I started doing. I visited there, and I wanted, could we have more data? How did we capture all this data when we tried to do this process, if we go forward with it? How do we save the data so we can lease a market, lease to find out what have we done today or going forward? How can we make sure that the other big companies is not saying that they are set up a business and they really not there? I mean, I don't know how you're going to do affidavits, if what. So I know there's got to be some kind of way that you have to do some kind of investigation to make sure someone does not set up the business, say they're a local person, and all of a sudden they really not.
Slide 17, that's a important part. That part of this is to determine if the principal place of business is within the City of Dallas. That's the one very important piece of a local preference, to ensure they're Dallas-based, that they have a principal place of business, a real presence in the City of Dallas. We're going to have an affidavit where they state that, and then on a case-by-case situation, because we don't think there's going to be a huge volume, we'll have to look at due diligence in those areas and ensure they actually have they're doing what they say they're doing. Yes,
sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway.
Thank you, Mayor. And let me just say just a couple things that I'd like to make sure that we stay on point with. One, in dealing with the small business, let's do our best to try to make it and simplify the process as best possible. I've had several small businesses, and the number one complaint is bonding that they can't get. Then we are very slow at times in paying the small businesses their checks. It's a lot of red tape. I appreciate us making sure that they are local small businesses. I mean, somebody just want to come and locate to open up the business and then move away. I think there's a system, you said something about page 17, that's in place that we will be able to make sure that the business is a legitimate business. I want to see us grow the small businesses that we know that are local and are here doing business, but provide them an opportunity. I'm going to stay very vigilant on making sure that the red tape is removed. But we, you know, sometimes they feel, and I'm speaking for a lot of them, they feel that they don't want to do business because it's designed for them to not do business, don't want to come do business because it's designed for them to fail. I hear this presentation today, Mayor and Council, but it's imperative that we remove the red tape. All these small businesses, and small businesses don't have everything that Mr. Big Business has, okay? They haven't been in business long enough to acquire certain statuses and certain types of portfolios and all of that. We must take another step, Sunil, to assist the small business. A little bitty man with a little bitty baby cafe. He may not have all of the equipment that certain other cafeterias may have, but we have to reach out. If we're going to build from within, if we're going to grow in the South and in and throughout Dallas, then we got to know that we're taking on some folks that may not have their file cabinets full of all of the necessary requirements and the paperwork and the this form and the that form. There needs to be a revisit as to how we wrap our arms around and assist the small business. And when the small business has an opportunity, they don't have a window that will allow them to wait 2 years to go and get certain things or certain amounts of dollars in an account or the insurance and things. I know I may sound like a broken record, but I hear this broken record every time I go to Walmart, every time I go out into my district. The people are complaining, and this is their number one complaint, is access and the red tape that it takes in order to do business with the city. Okay, now, if we're going to grow, we got to understand who we're trying to grow. And we have to have a little special wrapping here, special hands-on when it comes to these small businesses. Now, y'all might not understand what I'm talking about, but the small businesses that I'm speaking on behalf of, they certainly understand what I'm talking about. You know, this is what they go through every day. And so when it's time to get paid, we need to get paid. When it's time to cut the red tape, you got to cut the red tape. When it's time to say that these certain requirements are a little different from larger businesses, these are just certain things we got to understand. Did y'all, you think you got my point?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway. Ms. Hassel.
Thank you, Mayor. And I just want to thank the procurement department for doing the research on this. This was an issue that we brought up very early on this year. We understand Fort Worth has something similar to this. Houston has something similar to this called Houston First, where we are actually trying to keep local businesses afloat here in the city. So thank you for the research. Thank you for looking into what Houston's doing, what Fort Worth is doing. And I think this will do nothing more than help and help and help our local businesses and those big boys that want to come in and just open an office. You know, now hopefully there will be people that will employ and not only employ, but live in the area so that we can benefit in more than one way from these contracts. So thank you very much. I know the Hispanic Contractors Association is here today, and I know that they're in support of this. But again, thank you for the research. Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Ms. Hoffman. Mr. Allen.
Slide 7. I'm on a different side of the fence on this deal. Sometimes you have unintended consequences of actions that you do. It sounds good with local preference, and so it's hard not to argue for that, particularly as an elected official. But I did go back, and I flashed back on a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago. I did the same thing where allowing only uniform officers to have access to when you get a permit, you have to use it for so many officers and stuff. And the reality, I've seen that now, and that's penalized the citizens of Dallas, where we have to go out and hire 3-4 police officers, maybe even have a paramedic out at a location. And I found on the surface, it sounded pretty good. It sounded pretty good about uniformed officers being there because it's Dallas and we'll only have it. The reality turned out to be, in my opinion, it hurt our citizens in the long run, financially hurt our neighborhoods to do that. The local preference on this particular slide, what you see is you got, guess what, if I'm looking at it right, you got a base bid of $260,000 for bidder B. The low bid was $251,000, $9,000 difference. That $9,000 is money that could have gone to a recreation center for other amenities that they could have used instead of going back to that base bidder B and back to his savings account or checking account. So I'm not sold on it. I'm not sold on it. It's just my opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Ms. Davis.
Thank you so much. First of all, I think this is much improvement, Mayor, and to the procurement department. It is a start, and I still think that this is somewhat a much, much improved from where it was at. Let me go to page 17. We go to page 17, please. I see that you talk about the principal place of business, and what about home-based business? Do you consider that a location for that person's business?
It could be, and I think we're just going to have to, you know, we talked a little bit on a case-by-case basis. I don't know that we have imagined every way there might be a business, but if you could clearly, you know, identify that was the place of business.
Yeah, because some people have in their house a separate office set up in their home. They got a computer. They got the office, the whole thing set up like an office.
Right.
So I think we might need to look at that as a source of an address, because it is a permanent address.
Well, we will check out the businesses we're working with.
Okay, then.
They bid.
So that's one. Let's go to page 18. One of the things that I'm glad that your staff brought this back to me, one of the things that I would like to see, Mary, on here and to the staff is that you got your training at the Chamber of Commerce. But I also would like to see that we also work with the Contractors Association. You have your Hispanic, you have your Black, and your Asian Contractors Association. If we're talking about construction, and a lot of it is construction, these Contractors Associations, they have training at their own headquarters. And that's where all the contractors are going. They're going through them to get a lot of that training. So I would like to see us put that out there and work with those Contractors Association as well.
Ms. Davis, as we mentioned during the break, we spent significant time with John Martinez with the Regional Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and with John Kelly with the Black Contractors Association. I know they're developing, especially the BCA is developing an extensive training program for their members, and we're working with John Kelly and his leadership with Richard Knight to come up with training programs to do exactly that.
And as we said on the break, I know you said that to me, but it's not in black and white. I just like to see things in black and white. It's here, and anybody can pull it. It's on the website. And so if anybody goes to education information, they can say, okay, we got the Black contractors, we got the Hispanic, we got the Asian contractors. So we know that this is going to happen because it's in black and white.
Yes, ma'am.
Can we go to page 23, please? On the threshold, so Mary, this is an increase on the threshold. Is it an increase?
from 25 to 50.
Councilmember Davis, we haven't briefed that part yet, but we definitely can. Do you want to take questions before we brief the remaining slides? Okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I said, yeah, let's hold.
Oh, let's hold it. Oh, okay.
We're trying to resolve the first thing.
Oh, okay. So this is
not
resolved. I'm sorry. I was just moving.
We're going to stop there during the break.
Oh, okay. Then let me ask the last thing. Let's go to page 13. Okay, help me understand the exemption for once again. This is required by state law, right?
The exemption. What we're stating on the exemption page, it's anything negotiated, anything that we go into negotiations with evaluation criteria, which is typically proposals. It's not part of the state statute. Informal solicitations, which are less than $50,000 by statute, they're informal. They're not competitive bids, so that would be outside of the local preference. Anything grant funded, and I don't know exactly what area you want us to expand on, Ms. Davis. But
okay. So it's a state requirement.
Yes.
Okay. What's the sole source? What do you mean by sole source?
Items that are available from one place, patented, copyrighted. Proprietary software. A lot of times you have software in that area where you have something like that where you can't get any other case. That's a sole source, and it wouldn't apply to those type of situations.
Oh, okay. Page 12. On page 12, help me to understand that one more time.
Before we would bring this a local preference option to the council for consideration, first, we must determine in writing that it benefits the city of Dallas through economic development benefits and the contract price. So it would be a combination of both before we bring that forward for council consideration. We wanted to show you that if there's a difference, as Councilmember Allen stated, that it's in the city's best interest based on the information provided from the vending community, that it actually is an economic benefit to retain jobs or to retain tax base in the city of Dallas. We bring that forward on a case by case.
Well, Mr. Allen's not quite sure about this yet. let me ask you another question. This has to go before the council before it is approved.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, that's
the ordinance will come forward based on your recommendation today.
Okay. Now, what does the minority participation is this considered minority procurement, or does it fit within the?
It's not part of the city's business inclusion development plan. We will use this as another tool to recruit vendors to vending community to the city of Dallas' procurement, and we will work with all of our associations to ensure that they use their membership. They're sure there's local vendors that are within those categories as well, but it's not part of the city's business inclusion and development plan.
Okay, and why is that?
That's a separate policy adopted by council.
Okay, so this is a house bill by Ron. Can you come up, please? This is a house bill that's adopted by the state, and I like it. It's really I like it. I really do. But it doesn't fit under any type of procurement.
Ileana Fernandez with the City Attorney's Office. Could you repeat the question? I'm not sure I
okay.
heard it correctly.
Does this, it's a House bill.
That's correct.
I don't know. It was passed in
It was passed and made effective September 1st of 2011.
Okay. Is there any type of procurement? Can we use this for procurement opportunities?
This is only for procurement opportunities.
So it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it somewhere in writing to show that we're doing this for procurement opportunities?
Well,
the
statute has been codified in the local government code. It's a statute that allows you, the council, to adopt by ordinance this local preference. If you choose to do so, then it's an actual amendment to Chapter 2 of the City Code. So it'll be in the City Code.
So it is in the City Code.
It will be in the City Code if you choose to adopt the ordinance, yes.
Mary, do you, I guess I need to go back to our city manager.
No, no, that's why we're briefing you today, because it'll be on your agenda to vote for. And while Ileana's up there, I need to say thank you. She worked really, really hard on this and getting it done, and really appreciate that. We gave her a pretty short time frame, and I've always told Tom if I could steal her from him, I would. So she did a good job.
So we can adopt that. We can make this also a procurement opportunity as well to help us with our procurement numbers.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll generally say I'm in support of this. I think this is a good move to go forward. Most of these probably aren't going to be 5% off. We're probably talking about being 2.5% off, 2%, 1%. It really makes it about a tie. And we're really giving the benefit of the doubt when we have a situation of two bidders and there's a tie. We want to keep the dollars here in Dallas. We want to hit the streets as quick as we can here in the city of Dallas. So I'm generally I'm very supportive of this, and I think it's going to be a good way to break these ties, because in most cases it's going to be a 1% or 2%, 2.5% difference. I also agree with my colleague's comment about eliminating the red tape. These are small businesses, so they've got a very small set of scissors, and we got to take that into account. So when getting through all this red tape, being part of the program, we need to eliminate as much of that red tape as possible. So I'm on board with that. Thank you, ma'am.
Ms. McGraw.
Thank you. Mike, I just want to work with you. I made the call to Fort Worth, and I like what Fort Worth ISD does in terms of the principal place of business. So if you'll just get back with me, I'd like to just fill you in on a couple of details that they have. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Thank you. I just want to summarize. I will be supporting this. It's something that I listened to during the campaign, and a lot of people were very enthusiastic about this. You know, I think of the city as not only taking care of our citizens, but also a $3 billion financial machine. And when I think about how we spend that money, you have to think about strategically. We want excellence. We want the best cost. But I love everybody. I just love them a lot more if they live and work in Dallas. Okay? And that's the way I think we should be thinking about this. And I know procurement is oftentimes not a science but an art. And I would hope that you would use this in a clear way to kind of, as you get down to the numbers and all those points, but there's also how do you move towards that vision that the people that commit to the city of Dallas, we commit to them as well, and how you recruit people. And I want to do this so we don't have any unintended consequences, as Mr. Allen talked about, because you can't often do that. You can do something stupid if you focus on one thing. But I think using good judgment, we can use this as a tool to commit to Dallas. Dallas is a big city. We got lots of room for a lot of people, and we got a lot of different places and neighborhoods people can work and headquarters in. So I think we give everybody plenty of options. So I'm excited about this. Thank you, Ms. Soon, for pushing this ahead. Why don't we move to the next item? Yes.
I want to just ask Mayor one other thing. Mayor, do your office continue with procurement to offer those education training where people can come in and get educated?
We're doing some of that, but we've cut back because we've lost some staff, just like every other department.
Mm-hmm.
But if anybody, we have people to help people individually if anybody needs help with how to do business with us, and that's been one of our efforts for the last, you know, 5-6 years, so or longer. So
okay, and then one of the things that and I'll be finished, Mr. Mayor. I think one of the things I would like to see a little more training on is the bonding. You know, getting these contractors bonded.
We can tell people how to go get bonded, but their financial situations, and we can help them, but it's a challenge with the business that's just beginning and vis-a-vis their financial situation. So we'll keep focusing on that.
Are we able to tie them with other companies, perhaps like a big brother, big sister, or a big company, small company?
We do some of that, and sometimes that works. But you're absolutely right. Bonding is a huge challenge.
Okay.
Ms. Kerwin?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Ms. Davis, again, and Mr. McGreig for alluding to the small business. I just have to continue to say the bonding. That has been the biggest hurdle for the small businesses is the bonding. So whatever thoughts we can begin to come up with to help support that and to eradicate it, that's very important. Mayor, I want to say that I appreciate you showing your love for Dallas. And I would hope that every employee in the sound of my voice will take under the heat of the mayor and everybody try to move into Dallas. You know, I'm just looking around the room too, and and I just want to make sure that is something that we should strive for, and that's moving into the city that supports you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Allen. Thank you. Mr. Allen?
You know, like anything, when it's used properly, it can be a good tool. And let's always keep in the back of our mind, this will go back to the monitoring process as we go through this. We hear the word small business over and over again. And the reality, and Mr. Mayor, you know this as a businessman, the reality is if you are a small business, you've been in business generally less than 2 years, 3 years, it's back to cash flow. You do not have a cash flow. You're not going to be able to be a big player here in the city or even a small player. And the reason is because you cannot qualify for a line of credit at a bank. You do not have access to cash. So you have to package all of these things together, understand how you're going to help the small businessman and not make sure that it goes to a mid-sized businessman that's already established themselves, already got it, and the money's just going to go straight to his savings account, not benefiting anyone, the citizens of Dallas. So let's just make sure that we stay focused on this and realize what the true facts are on it. So
good. Thank you. That's good. Ms. Sim?
Before we start the second part of this presentation, this is about both of these proposals to you reflect laws that have been passed by the state legislature changing some of the ways that we do business in local government, and we have the opportunity to align our business practices with some of the these opportunities that the state legislature has provided us, and this next briefing is along the same lines as the previous one we gave you in that regard. So, Mr. Frosch.
Let's go to page 23, please. As Mary stated, there was recent legislative changes, and some not so recent, back in 2007, that changed the procurement threshold and other factors associated with change orders with competitive bids. Slide 23, we're recommending city manager currently has authorization by administrative action to make changes, and when you look at the sub-bullets, that's straight from the code today, the $25,000, It's a strike through, as you see a strike through, and the recommended change is underlined like we would in normal changes, so that as you move through these next few pages, the current limit is the $25,000, which would be a strike through, and the underlying would be the proposed. So currently, for good services and construction, facility construction, city manager by administrative action has the authority to approve contracts up to $25,000. And we're recommending to move that to $50,000, which is part of the 2007 legislative change. And that should be noted as well, that's the competitive bid change, that competitive bids have to go out in Dallas Morning News and be posted. And the informal bids by state statute now are $50,000. We've been more restrictive in those areas since 2007, and all the other agencies have changed to $50,000 in 2007. So we're a little more restrictive, and this will allow us to move on smaller purchases a little more expeditiously. The second bullet, that we're asking for to increase the delegated authority from 25,000 to 50, and for competitive bids, that when we go out and do an actual competitive process, and we would ask for delegated authority up to $70,000 to the city manager from 50. And the final bullet on page 23 is related to facilities construction. Currently, it's administrative action up to $25,000. You know, requesting that the city manager's delegated authority go to $50,000 and $70,000 for items that are competitively bid, been approved by administrative action. Page 24, personal planning and professional services. Currently, by administrative action, the city manager has authority of $25,000. There again, this was a
statute change, and we're trying to codify the code with statute to go to $50,000 for professional planning and personal services. And if you have a real estate appraisal, of course, we're doing the same thing at the bottom of the page in 25 to 50. The next page, proposed change order thresholds. Change orders are currently changes to document specs, modifications of a current scope, and it's typically used when we talk about construction. City manager is currently authorized for $25,000 change orders with a competitive bid, and we're requesting that to be raised to $50,000, which would match codified state law. The important note there that we would, you can never do an increase more than 25%. That'd have to come back to council. And on page 26, it's another amendment to current contracts. Amendments are anything that modifies, alters, deletes a provision or condition of a current contract. And the current delegated authority by administrative action for amendments for competitive bids are $25,000. And there again, we're trying to raise it to $50,000 to codify state law. And there, another note there, you can't change more than, no change can be more than $50,000, and anything that's more than 25% would be recommended for council approval. Exercising renewal options, where we have renewal options, it's pretty self-explanatory. If we have a renewal option today, it can be administered as a administrative action up to $50,000. We're requesting that to be raised to $70,000. And the renewal option for items that aren't competitively bid are currently $25,000, and we're requesting that to be increased to $50,000. On page 28, there's current settlement authority for the city attorney's office. And personal injury claims, they have a delegated authority up to $5,000, property damage claims up to $10,000, and then for contract claims, all contract claims, regardless of the dollar amount, currently come to council for approval. The recommendation of the city attorney's office is to change that to $25,000 for delegated authority, and all of the changes will come to city council. I had a summary chart on page 29. It's kind of a busy chart, but it kind of shows you all the changes that we recommended for the code amendment, and kind of walks through the current authority and the proposed authority based on these code changes. I want to remind you that our current process and transparency and how we do business here at the City of Dallas, all formal and informal bids are posted on the city's vendor or self-service site for all the public to view and hopefully participate. And of course, the formal bid, in this case, we're recommending up to $50,000, will be advertised in the Dallas Morning News. All of our formal bids are publicly opened and broadcast with public access, which is different than most cities. We use cable access and online for all the vending public to see the actual process for transparency. And currently, all administrative actions and key card transactions are posted on the city's website. The claim settlements for the city attorney's office will be added to the website if this ordinance is approved by council. So in summary, we're recommending bring an item forward and an upcoming agenda for the council consideration to make the changes based on the briefing that we had today. And we're
in closing, I think it's real important to let the next last page in the transparency. All of this is posted. It's been posted 3 or 4 years, Mike, is that when we started doing it? So that anybody can see any of these expenditures we're making and ask questions about them if they need to. The other thing that several of you spoke to a minute ago was red tape, and this is speeding up the process, particularly in small expenditures, that we can get through the system and get the business done and get people paid more quickly. So that's our recommendation, and it's in line with state law.
Thank you. Questions, comments? Yes, Mr. Carraway.
Just on page, I think, page 30.
Yes,
I don't have problems. I don't want people to take this wrong. But the morning news, it should just be one. You know, when we're talking to certain communities, everybody don't read morning news. And everybody don't have a computer. And, you know, the Elite News, the Post Tribune, the Dallas Weekly, the Idea, and other papers. I just think we ought to find a way to make sure that when opportunities are being posted, that we attempt to make it as global as possible.
We just we do that in many, many cases. Dallas Morning News, whether we like it or not, it's the official newspaper, and everything has to go in that. When we need to reach out on a particular issue, we be sure it gets other places too.
And then maybe, because I know they're going to get me now, but maybe we should, you know, I don't have a problem with being the official paper for certain official things, but special outreach needs to be out there more than and beyond the Dallas Morning News. I agree that and I will continue to vote for it to be the official paper, okay? I guess.
Don't promise too hastily.
But I want to make sure that we are reaching out as far as we possibly can, especially when we're talking about opportunities.
I hear you.
For
that
do not read it.
That's another reason we give all the upcoming opportunities to all the contractor associations, all the chambers, and we do a lot of outreach.
Maybe when we
papers too.
Maybe when we rebid it, do the arrangement with Morning News, that we either consider putting in a little more for other papers or other avenues, and maybe a little. I don't know what to do.
I hear you.
Need to reach out to the communities of all and do that. That's all, man.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway. Ms. Margolin.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm not going to be supporting this. I want to continue to get as much information as I can on my agenda and understand what all the expenditures are going to be, and so I'm not going to support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Margolin. Mr. Cadane.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mary, is there one on what Dwayne said? Is there a way we could put these on our websites?
They're on our website.
We have them put on our personal website.
I can give them to you, and you can.
That's what I'm saying.
Because if you
do that, send me the info, sir.
Yes, we can do that.
Send it to our folks.
Certainly.
Then we can put it out on our site.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Grayson.
Yeah, I noticed in the briefing materials it said that the administrative actions, all of them that have been taken, were listed on our website. Where would that be on our website? And could you, instead of that, send it to us periodically? We used to get a report. Do we get it?
No, because that is a massive thing to compile, and that's why we put it on the computer, and I'll show you how to get there.
Yeah, just please
anybody,
show me how to get it.
And the nice thing about that is that anybody can get to it, not just the council. So everybody can look at it.
I mean, we used to get that on paper. I know it was a big, thick report, but it was really interesting reading. And so if you give me a link,
all there on
like
the Internet, we'll get you there.
Thank you.
We'll send all of you how to get there. Yep, that's cool.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. What we're going to do now is go into executive briefing. We were not able to do that over lunch, and then we'll come back for the final afternoon speakers. So it is 2:22 p.m., June 6th, 2012. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda. City of Dallas v. James Robert McDaniel et al., Maria Rojas individually as next friend of Michael Rojas v. City of Dallas, Lavelle Fairbanks v. Travis French, Roderick Lyles v. City of Dallas et al., legal issues in connection with amendment to Dallas Development Code 551A8.500 subdivision layout design. Hopefully we'll be about 30 or 45 minutes.
At all? Well, a few, may I have your attention? A few of us went to the premiere of the series Dallas, and just want to announce that it is on TNT, June 13, 8 p.m. It's a two-hour series, and it's the premiere, and don't miss it. For those that didn't go, boy, this new Dallas has a lot of twists, turns, and I was discussing it with somebody, and they say, Ms. Madrona, it's an arsenal of just of schemes and betrayals, and you just cannot miss it. It's great. It is very good. It was something very different than the council usually goes to, and I heard at least one council member says, well, I'll be here 20 minutes and I'm going to have to leave. Well, I saw that council member 2.5 hours later. So it was a lot of fun, and it premieres June 13, 8 p.m. at TNT, and I think everyone will love it. And they'll get to see the new Dallas. Our new landmarks, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Good afternoon. Your afternoon speakers will begin with Priscilla Hartman, Lakeisha Gilbreth, Zyla London, Kendon Wallace, Carol Bell Walton. I'll now recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting, shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant at Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. Notice the timer on both walls. Please address your comments to Mayor Pro Tem Madrona. When your time is up, please allow the next speaker their turn. Ms. Priscilla Hartman? Not present. Lakeisha Gilbreth? Zyla London? Kendon Wallace? Carol Bell Walton? Go ahead. Please state your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Carol Bell Walton. My address is 6705 Velasco. I'm in District 9. I wanted to bring to your attention a newspaper article I read a couple of weeks ago, and it was about a name change. The Highland Park Crew is changing their name to the United Dallas Crew. And I'll tell you that in the history of forever, no one has ever changed their name from Highland Park to Dallas, so I thought it'd be a good idea to look into this. Well, the website said that they were changing their name because of diversity, but I looked through several hundred pictures, and their definition of diversity might be different than my definition of diversity. They might be talking about horoscopes. I don't really know. I scanned through hundreds of pictures, didn't find any minorities. And so I kept saying, why the name change? Why the name change? Well, it took me back to a park board meeting that I went to not long ago where they were going to pave a fourth parking lot at White Rock Lake for a yet unnamed boat crew. So a new boat crew, the United Dallas Crew, is going to spend $4.5 million on a new boat building on White Rock Lake. So Highland Park is going to build a boat building on White Rock Lake. And the Parks Board is saying that our park bond dollars will go towards paving the parking lot for them. Now, this wasn't even conceived of when the bond election happened, so I don't know how this gets funded with bond dollars for a boathouse that isn't there or funded. But I promise you, if you look on Dallas United website, there is no money asked in the $4.5 million for a parking lot. They're counting on someone else to provide the parking lot, and I'm afraid that that's the City of Dallas. So, what can we get for our $4.5 million if we're going to give Highland Park a piece of the lake? I'd like to see that we can ensure some diversity. This is a rowing crew that costs $5,000 to join and doesn't offer any scholarships. Wouldn't it be wonderful if they offered scholarships to minorities so minorities could learn to row and get the incredible rowing scholarships that are available at many, many colleges? I think that'd be fabulous. There's also programs for disabled rowers where you have pontoons on each side of the boat. You can see these at the White Rock Crew House.
Wouldn't it be great if the Highland Park crew actually supported disabled rowers as well, if it wasn't just a Highland Park clubhouse? That's what we'd like to see if they move to White Rock Lake. If you've got any questions about this, please let me know, because that extends my 3 minutes. So how do we ensure that these are good neighbors? Well, I don't know. They have been evicted from their last 3 locations. They are currently being evicted from the White Rock Boathouse. They have been evicted by the City of Dallas when they boated out of the bathhouse. And they have been evicted by the Dallas crew over at Bachman Lake. How do you ensure somebody's a good neighbor if they've been evicted 3 times? I have no idea, but I'm a neighbor of the lake, and I'd sure like your suggestions.
Ozan Balan, not present. Richard Sheridan.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Richard Sheridan from the 3022 Forest Lane, Dallas, Texas. Title of my speech is Revelation 2012. We be judged by our works. That's what 2012 says. Presented to the Dallas City Council. Professional engineer in New York, a candidate for sheriff, Richard Sheridan. Quote, in the Watts neighborhood of Los Angeles, California, from August 11th to August 15th in 1965, the 5-day riot resulted in 34 deaths, over 1,000 injuries, 3,400 arrests, and over $40 million in property damages. It was the worst riot in L.A.'s history until the L.A. riots of 92, quoting from Winnipedia. The riot began, the first domino to fall, was a black man, Mr. Fry, being pulled out of his car, by a white California Highway Patrol motorcycle officer, Lee Minicus, on a DWI suspicion. Fry's brother, Ronald, the passenger, walked home and brought back their mother. Police, backup arrived and attempted to arrest Fry by using physical force to subdue him. A crowd began to gather, and in the wink of an eye, residents began yelling and throwing objects at the police officers. Fry's mother fought with the officers, and she also was arrested with her 2 sons. Later the next day, August 12th, the L.A. police chief, after increasing arrest, called it for help from the National Guard, and the rest is history. The black people of Watts were suffering in addition to the intolerable heat. They were suffering intolerable social and racial injustices. Are the social and racial injustices in Dallas today less or greater than in Watts of 1964? I can recite a list that includes the alleged COINTELPRO, where's the white man in the FBI investigation of Commissioner John Wally Price, the totally unjust sentencing of Don Hill, a black man, versus Brian Potasnik, a white man, or the 2 white women, Potasnik's wife and Laura Miller, getting off scot-free. And then there's the 2 biggest cases of environmental racism in Dallas, the genocidal RSR smelter and the theft of the Trinity River Project, and the recent police shooting of a man fleeing a police officer in handcuffs. I believe the black man was in handcuffs and the officer was a white man, unless I hear otherwise. Does anyone want to share the fact that the police officer was white? Last but not least, Mayor Rollins is not here, and I'm addressing Mayor Rollins in absentee. You have responsibility to lead us in these critical times, to lead us through a valley of potential death and suffering, but instead you are Dallas's Herod, and are leading us to a highway to hell. May you be immediately removed from office, Mayor Rollins.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
All of us should pray to God on this matter. Thank you very much.
Robert Ceccarelli.
Robert Ceccarelli, 5302 Arianas Boulevard.
I'm addressing this to the mayor also. He's not here. I gave two copies, one to Ms. Hill, one to Ms. Davis. At first, I just want to address about what's going on last week. Right now, mayor has a total trust and accountability problem with the Dallas city of Dallas right now. Not only at $350,000, but also with me about the education of South Dallas schools. Right, I also mentioned last week about the cheating scandal with the DISD, and what happened in today's paper, Mr. Miles is also in the controversy already with the salaries with other personnel, especially someone who came from his district and is making more money than the chief of police. I warned Mr. Rollins about this, about make sure you get track on the cheating scandal, make sure you hold people accountable what they're doing. And during the election campaign, he mentioned South Dallas schools, and what I'm seeing right now is I don't have any trust in what he's saying about South Dallas schools or holding people accountable or maybe committing felonies. All right, so I've said that before, and I really mean that. Now, before you, Ms. Davis, is my transcript. I have a master's in education. Second page talks about Lincoln High School. Ms. Hill, I would address this to you because you're a supporter of Bernadette Nuttall. Lincoln High School, third page. Third column. Please read, please, Ms. Davis and Ms. Hill. Lincoln cannot afford to wait on Washington, D.C. or Austin. Beginning next year, Lincoln's school day will run from 8:30 a.m. to 4:15. 75 minutes of mastery special class and 25 minutes of reinforcement and tutoring. And the next paragraph talks about my name and what I thought about the program. All right, now here's the trust issue about holding people accountable. This email, I've said it before, was sent to Ms. Bernadette Nuttall, Ms. Hill, on February 7th. Ms. Swan spoke on February 23rd about what they're going to do at Lincoln High School. I mentioned several times to this committee about my suggestions to Lincoln High School, and right now, I want to read this right here. Fourth page, underlined. I brought up the proposition that Lincoln High School should be a year-round school and have a slight adjustment on the academic day. I mentioned that each instructional period would be 1 hour, and it would be 30 minutes for tutoring and homework. Your primary teacher would be the student's tutor and help your child with their homework. I've asked Mr. Rollins to check the five verifications that I'm telling is true. Tonell Hobbs, Colleen Nelson, Lashonda Cook, Bernadette Nuttall, and
Leslie Swan. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
William Hopkins, not present. Lakeisha Johnson.
Hi, my name is Keisha Johnson. I'm here on behalf of the Timmer. Please, man, I have my one-year girl. I have brought her today to speak to y'all because y'all don't hear us. So I brought here, we brought the kids, and maybe y'all listen to the kids today because y'all hear nothing that we got to say about these schools being closed. And, you know, it's kind of funny, y'all can't step in it. We have been looking into this. Y'all can help if y'all really wanted to help. But I don't really think y'all do. I mean, it doesn't make no sense for I can't have you move out their safety, and go to a school across a bridge, across the highway. We're going to keep missing bus. You can't even keep keeping that bus. They're not used to keeping that bus. They're not used to working there enough 6 o'clock in the morning to have to go keeping that bus. My day, when we get home, my day don't do it. because it's ridiculous that y'all can't step up and do it for our kids. We had to watch last Thursday. We had to sit there and watch all our kids cry when they pulled down the flag for the last time at Arlington Park. It was certain what all the kids at Arlington Park sitting there and just break down and cry and ask her, why are they doing a changes? Why don't nobody help us? I mean, that's just looking at a safety job. I can say if it was another school in the area, ain't no other school in the area. Y'all want our kids to go cross a bridge. Cross a bridge. Let a big kid get on a bridge. Okay, let me ask you, when the president ain't got no car, and what when the kid missed the bus? And the kid keep reaching the bus too many times, what y'all do? We only going to jail because y'all won't step up and help us. Keep one school open, a recognized school. A recognized school. A school that prepares for our children. I mean, we had to teach them in the school to show y'all what y'all are doing to our kids. And all the time, y'all weren't there last Friday when I had to walk around and grab, I had to grab my daughter last Friday because she got more pregnant, crying because her school been closed for the last time. They had a last 40 and she almost had a breakdown because she never forgot why we give her. I had to tell y'all, I have to keep it all in the park. And not going to her ninjas. And that ain't going to my beyond.
Thank you very much.
So,
LaCoya, London.
Hello, I'm LaCoya, London, 1716 Chattanooga Place, Dallas, 75235. Okay, all these months we have been coming to get this thing involved in the school clothing. And we have, like you said, we have done research. Y'all can help us. Okay. Mr. Calway is gone, but he has been trying to stay, step in for the mayor to answer the point. I mean, the point, give a point about y'all not being able to help. Okay, this was a Supreme Court decision. So I want to know, how is DISD able to overrule a Supreme Court decision? I understand the desegregation order was closed, but y'all were able to bare feet standards die before y'all even consider closing the schools. I mean, 2003, he closed the order. 2008, he died. I mean, Mr. Tasby is still living. I mean, what a blow to the head, because y'all going to sit up here and do this. Know why he's alive? I mean, he fought hard, blood and tears, for them, for the school to be open. I mean, it was majority white. And he wanted his kids to go to this school, which was down the street from his house, around the corner. And so that's the reason why we're trying to find out why y'all can't get involved. You can. Okay, I have talked to a couple of congressmen, and I've asked them the same situation about why y'all can't get involved. Because I asked them, could they get involved? They said, no, this is a local issue. So how come y'all can't be involved? And Ms. Medrano, okay, you over our area, and Bud Weiser is over there, which it is a KKK-ran business. We know who owns Bud Weiser. Why is it there? I don't know. Y'all wiped out some houses for Budweiser. Y'all wiped out some houses for it. Okay. This has been a business-oriented situation from the get-go since 1970 when he filed for this, you know, school to be for the blacks or the colors or the Negroes, however you want to take it. Okay. That's when it was filed. It took 40 years, you know, for this situation, you know, to die down. 2003. From 1970 to 2003. They didn't go to the Supreme Court till the 80s. So, our point is, you can get involved because this is our kids' lives that's, you know, at stake. Okay, we don't want our kids walking way across the street or trying to walk home, accidentally walking home, whatever. I mean, they might miss the bus, and we're looking at the safety issue. I mean, maybe even the Dallas Police Department needs to get involved, the Sheriff's Department, somebody, because it's a safety issue. That's all it is. We're not looking at where the school is. Then you have a school on Maple Lawn. You got Maple Lawn Elementary School. Then you have Hernandez Elementary School, which is a block away from each other. How did y'all zone that? Can you tell me how did you zone that? Anybody? Because Caraway gone. He can't answer no questions. So who's going to answer the questions? Because Maple Lawn and Hernandez is a block away from each other. And you're going to move us away from ours and make us go a mile and a half away. Makes no sense.
Then happy to speak to you.
To speak to me? Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Because we got a lot of stuff.
Gwayne Wooten.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwayne Wooten. I live in the city of Dallas, the Dallas City Council. Now, y'all know I went to Pentecostal Church and Catholic school, so I'm going to read something out the Bible for y'all. Revelation, first chapter, starting with the 10th verse. And John said, I was in the spirit of the Lord on that day and heard behind me a great voice as a trumpet saying, I am Alpha and Omega. And what thou see, write in a book and send it to the seven churches. And I turned to see the voice that spoke to me, and being turned, I saw seven golden sticks, golden candlesticks. And in the midst of the seven candlesticks, one like unto the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to his feet, and gripped and with a path with a golden girdle. His head and his hair were white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were as a flame of fire, and his feet were like fine brass, as if it had been burnt in the forest, in a furnace, and his voice was as the sound of many waters. I consider that to be a description of the Christ, and he's not white. Now, I've been down here talking to y'all about this lead part. I'd also like to tell the children, I've already told, I'm an Arlington Park alumni, first seventh grade class, I think, 57. So I know about the neighborhood school. I enjoyed going to Arlington Park. It was a nice school. I guess it's excellent. Now they're crying to stay out there. But I want to talk to y'all about how Dallas Housing Authority had white people and Hispanics go Singleton in Westmoreland. Then they moved them out and filled them up with black folks across the street from that lead plant. I was in Eddie Burning's office when I heard about $25 billion who have been distributed to the people who were lead partnered in West Dallas. I'll make us up in what I heard spoken to a news reporter. We were totally disrespected in that office. I don't know what Ms. Johnson is going to do about our questions, because we never did get to ask for it. But concerning the Frisco, now, they just had an accident about 3-4 months ago. They've already solved their problem. Now, it's through. They know what they're going to do with the business. The city know what it's going to do with the land. And the people going to be compensated. Now, I got a baby just got off the dialysis machine today. That's why I come down here at 11 o'clock, because I want to hear her voice when she get off that machine. Y'all got to do something about killing people. And black folks, I don't know if y'all sleep. I don't know who y'all praying to. I don't understand y'all. And some of the white people are more compassionate toward us than y'all are. And I don't see nothing funny down here. We need representation. People weren't murdered so you can come down here and be eating in these people's houses and drinking their stuff and then coming down here playing with them. This is serious stuff. These children need a safe place to go to school. People in West Dallas need compensation for being harmed by
the city.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. And you are a defendant, not a plaintiff.
Lakeisha Gilbreth.
My name is Makisha Gilbert. I am a delicate experience. I thought I was going to finish my last 2 years in Arlington Park, but I guess not. Some people in DISD want to close it. But I hope they don't think I'm going to Hernandez, because I'm not. I am an I am not, and all I want to say is that they don't really care about us. They seem not to care about us. That's DIZ, and this school has been here for 55 years, and we did a petition, and DIZ did not look at it well. Like I said, they don't really care about us. How come you can't help us? The Supreme Court did Mr. Chazzy work hard for us to go to his school. So how come you let his hard work go in vain? Our choir won the competition 6 years in a row. Suppose it means anything to the city.
Thank you very much.
Zyla London.
Hi, my name is Kyla London, K-Y-L-A. I am a Dallas resident. Arlington Park won the choir competition 6 times in a row. We won 3rd place in volleyball and 2nd place in basketball. At the end of the school year, everyone was crying, and you hurt people. We think DISD is a bully. DISD must be stopped. I have dyslexia, and I have a friend that has it too. I will fight for my school from the bottom of my heart, even if it takes me all day and all night. Mr. Tazzy is the person that took DISD to court. He made it where all of us could go to school at Arlington Park. The Supreme Court also helped us too. So how come your city of Dallas won't help us? You can help us, yes you can. My brothers are scared to ride the bus, like Rosa Parks said. Rosa Parks sat on the bus for me. Martin Luther King marched for me. Barack Obama became president for me. And Mr. Sam Tasby helped blacks to go to school like Arlington Park. It was done for me. So how come DISD won't ask for the Supreme Court approval before closing my school? Our school, Arlington Park, shows us you care about us by looking at the petitions we sent to y'all. I am the one who really started the petition. Help Arlington Park now.
Thank you very much. Your final speaker will be Kendon Wallace.
My name is Kendon Wallace, and I'm Dallas representative. I want Arlington Park to stay open because it's a fun school. And one thing, I've been there from pre-K to 4th grade, and I want to finish my last year of elementary at Arlington Park. But I can't because y'all are closing the school. People have loved the school for years, even me. When I go to middle school, I want to be able to say hey to my old teachers. And when I get old, I want that school to be open. I was in choir and we won the competition 6 times. This school was open for 55 years for a good reason. This school will still be in my heart.
Mr. Wallace. Ms. Mayor, this concludes your speakers and the